Good morning, honourable members. It's 9 o'clock. Welcome to the second day of our proceedings with regard to the budget vote of the South African Police, vote 23. Can we just ask that the gallery just, if they want to have meetings, please have it outside.
Order. Yeah.
Yes, honourable members, yesterday we had the civil society organisations giving us input. Today we're going to focus on of course program 1 administration as well as program 2 visible policing. Maybe in terms of our program, I just want to again indicate to members that on Friday we will, if we don't finish today with visible policing, we will continue with that. Then detective services and DPCIs on Friday. Next Tuesday we will finalise the police hearings with crime intelligence and program 5, protection and security services. Next Wednesday we're going to deal with the civilian secretariat. And then IPET will be with us next Thursday, the 23rd of April. CIRAP, 24 April. And then members, we want to finalise the report, the BRRR report on the 6th of May. So we will have enough time to deal with that going forward. Yeah, welcome to the National Commissioner and the team today. Welcome to the year. Maybe to indicate today that part of our approach this year with the Portfolio Committee, and we also indicated that yesterday, we look especially at the issue of leadership, leadership of the institutions, leadership of the divisions, leadership of the other institutions that we deal with. Is there state leadership? Are we achieving the goals we set out? Are we able to deal with the challenges? Yesterday in the briefing, it was quite important to note that 11% of the budget of the Republic of South Africa goes to the South African Police Service. 11%. It is a huge amount of money. And the question is, at the end of the day, the outcomes. Do we've got the outcomes? And the big question also is in terms of leadership, does it cascade to the lowest level, to the stations? Because that is where the biggest need is for service delivery. If I listen to my colleagues from the different parties, most of their complaints is from the stations. And really the question is, that 11% of the national budget, is it really finding productive ground where it is spent? Maybe just to indicate, I think the National Commission indicates in the performance plan, I think in the introduction paragraph 6, he mentions the issue of the challenges of resources of these stations. But maybe in my introduction I want to indicate that I think a big issue is going forward, an issue that we must debate, is the question of leadership, also the leadership cluster level. To give you an example, last Thursday I was invited by community leaders to go to an unannounced visit to the Ashton Police Station in the Boerland that falls under the Worcester Cluster. And it is a well-resourced police station, it's a captain station, it's got the full complement of members of 58. But the question of equality of service is a big issue in that community. The main police station in Ashton is servicing the town itself, but outside is the Kolani Township that has got the satellite police station. I think that is the big question of that 11%. Are we spending the money right across the board correctly? For instance, in that satellite police station, which accounts for about 30-40% of crime stats of the last 3 months, for instance, just to give you an example, sometimes the station is not open. Only police personnel of a certain language group are delegated to that police station. In the last 2 weeks, the key of the satellite station was not was lost. There is not, the security gate is not working. Since 2012, there's no fixed landlock since 2012. Now, I asked for the visitors book, and that's why the question of management and leadership is so paramount in our whole discussion of the budget. I looked through the visitors book in this year of 2015, the station commander only visited that satellite police station two times. There is no signature of the cluster commander. I'm not even talking about inspectorate or provincial management. So the big question is, if we want to spend this 11% of the budget effectively and productively, it's not only the question of resources. It is about leadership. Is there, from the provincial commissioners, leadership to ensure that that cluster commander is in charge? It doesn't help that the cluster commander sits in Worcester and there is no monitoring. I've looked through the report of the inspectorate of December last year. It's a lot of follow-ups. Issues that outstand, but it's not a thing that we can talk budget. We can say we want to ensure that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, but we must ensure that all citizens receive the same level of service. We can't have a situation where one community gets second class service, and the rest is properly resourced with vehicles, things like that. That we must change. And I think after 20 years of democracy, looking also at your APP, I think we must do much more in terms of that budget available to ensure that there is equitable state. Otherwise, we're going to have a situation where communities where most crime are taking place do not have the necessary resources. And we're not addressing it. Yesterday we had ample evidence of from the Kailisha community, social justice and other institutions indicate the skewed resources, and that's why we need leadership in the provinces. The provinces must ensure that all communities are effectively resourced. We can look at the 72 billion and say 76 billion, but the real question is, are we making sure that all South Africans, all 50 million, are equally given the right prioritization? So that is really what we are looking for at the Portfolio Committee in this next 4 or 5 days in terms of the priorities. Are we spreading that 72, 76 million rand across the board effectively? I think that is really, from our side, the most important issue. We are looking forward to the interaction, and without further ado, over to the National Commissioner team. I know you just asked the members quickly to introduce themselves, and they will ask the National Commissioner also to introduce it.
Melang kay tulin na nakakain na isumo liba at si Tulo Pula Committee. Kaya lang baka.
Thank you, Sir. Good morning. My name is Tulila Mola. Tulo of this committee.
Thank you, Voorzitter. En dat jongere die oppositie vandag. My probleem is dat ek het net een vierde program, so ek net vir 'n paar minute verskoon word. Maar ek wil dan vraag vir die politie dat net sal kort aan kan wees. So, my dankie.
En die is
Well, Honourable Fribourg, yes, you see, only is then only one party that must keep the police accountable. They will be here. Welcome, and you welcome to introduce your delegation.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On behalf of the South African Police Service, we thank you for the opportunity to present to this address gathering our strategic plan, our APP, and our proposed budget. I note also the opening comments that you've given, but I shall also engage them as I start the presentation for the committee, to the committee. The team that is accompanying me here, the first team that is here are people who are in the program One Space. Let me start off by the leadership that will be part of the process throughout the various programs. Myself, I'm the National Commissioner of Police, Riyan Pilecha. I'm accompanied by the three Deputy National Commissioners, Lieutenant General Bekela, Lieutenant General Skete, and Lieutenant General Stoli. From our communications team, I have Major General Ngezi. From our strategic division, we are accompanied by Major General Menziwa. I'm also accompanied by the executive manager in our office, Major General Dr. Vuma. Brigadier Malakela, who is the executive secretariat, and Lieutenant Kenneth Payne, also from the secretariat and responsible for our government liaison. the leaders that come from Program 1 that are here leading various divisions. The Divisional Commissioner for Human Resources is Lebanon and Gender and Sia. The Divisional Commissioner for Facilities Management is Lieutenant General Mukwanabi. The Divisional Commissioner for Legal Services. Oh, you don't see them. All right. Let me... Okay, can I just go back? Mbegla? DMC? They saw you. Sorry? This was you saw. Okay. You want the Program 1 Divisional Commissioner. May I request you to rise so that you can be noted by the committee. The Lieutenant General Lucia is our Divisional Commissioner for Human Resources. Okay. Lieutenant General Mukwanazi is our Divisional Commissioner for Facility Management. Lieutenant General Molefe is our Divisional Commissioner for Legal Services. Lieutenant General Shezi is our Divisional Commissioner for Technology Management. Lieutenant General Jaffa is our Divisional Commissioner for Inspectorate. Major General Nyalunga is our Acting Divisional Commissioner for Human Resource Development. And then Major General Tilley is standing in, is the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Supply Chain Management, standing in for Lieutenant General Cruiser, who's on leave. Okay. Brigadier Cantoner has been invited, is the provincial head for Technology Management Services in Western Cape. Colonel Zichel Meyer, Finance and Administration, with General Stephen. And Colonel Ravi Jones from Supply Chain Management, so that we can answer your questions. That's the team that is with me in Program 1. I will introduce Program 2 when we get into this proposal. They are not here with us.
Maybe General, sorry, I may just want to also welcome this morning the Honourable Deputy Minister of Police, Honourable Emin Sochi. She's very much welcome. And at any time, she's also a Member of Parliament, so if she also wants to ask a question, she's very much welcome. Thank you for being with us. Over to you, General.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I shall be going through the presentation that is before us then, but let me just embrace the issues that you've raised. I'm hoping that we'll be able to cover them through our presentation. Where we're not able to, we would be willing to answer, you know, specific issues as you've raised them. You've raised the issue that the police are receiving a significant amount of resources from state, 11% of the state budget, 76%, and that is also commensurate to the challenges that we're facing as police. I believe it is also the weight of the significance of the work that is done by the police that requires that when such resources are made, you know, those are taken into account. I listened to the Minister of Finance when he was announcing the budget. He spent quite some time around issues of safety and security and emphasized the focus in terms of allocation of resources, and indeed we realize that our job is not an easy one. It's a very complex and plurally complex task of keeping South Africa safe, to ensure that all citizens, be they economic, be they educational, be they religious, all citizens of this country are able to go about their lives in a safe and secure manner. You emphasize here the issue of leadership. I hope to touch on some of those aspects, and indeed, we are on record, I am on record saying to everybody, leadership is a game changer. The only way we are going to start shifting significantly our performance, it is when we have leaders who understand A, what they need to do, and two, they do what they are supposed to be do, effectively they account equally in the fashion. I'll touch a little bit on those issues of leadership. I agree, Chairperson, that issues of access are crucial, not only in policing, but in all departments. And whether you look at education, you look at health, you look at the police, changing issues of access is paramount for all of us. I'm also wanting to say, when we talk about issues of access, we should realize that the policing architecture and geopolitical aspects. Indeed, a lot of the police stations that we took responsibility for since 1994, their location indeed was not in the previously disadvantaged areas or rural communities. So the program and the journey of actually creating that asset is quite an enormous one, and it requires a lot of resources. Once you are maintaining that which is existing and take a little bit of what is remaining to the other areas, it's quite an involved process. And this is why we are exploring other mechanisms, Chairperson, of looking at how we can fast-track this asset. The whole issue of mobile policing, the work that we're doing with CSIR, as it presented to you in this room, is looking precisely at those issues, because the resources that they are not really easily, quickly taking us where we're supposed to be going in terms of access. But those are issues that we will embrace, shall we discuss, and we are highly focused also on that matter. Because if you look at the simple process of building police stations, police stations in all these areas, it's going to take us many, many more years. And if that is the only means of accessing police services to communities, we'll never get it. That's why we're looking very closely at all these alternate methods of ensuring that while building the police station is one of the, is the utmost, or is the pinnacle of access, we must still in the meantime find ways of ensuring that citizens of this country access policing services. You mentioned issues of accountability and the work of the inspectorate and others. I will talk in our presentation around issues of combined assurance, how we are gearing ourselves for dealing with those type of issues. Equitable spread chairperson indeed shall always be remain an issue that preoccupies us as a South African police service. Let me then go into our presentation, and first let me also just join Chairperson in recognizing our Deputy Minister for being with us here today. Chair, I want to start right at the beginning talking about the planning economy, and just to say how do we process the framework that we follow to inform our planning as it presented to you. We know that there are electoral processes. There would be a manifesto which would focus on particular areas, and the manifesto that is guiding the ruling party focuses in terms of our area on justice, crime, and fighting corruption and dealing with issues of crime. Once that process has been dealt with, Chairperson, that process migrates, as you would in our slides there, into policy and strategic direction. The ruling party pronouncement on policy for government is based on the election manifesto, and as a result, that resulted in the 14 objectives, government objectives, for guiding strategic priorities of government. And that, out of those 14 objectives, we looked at how those align to our government department and our portfolio. When we look at that alignment and the implementation process, indeed, we start looking at as the KCP as cluster, how to align our services, our plans, our strategies to those outcomes of the state. Indeed, we have worked around those and signed performance agreements to ensure that they were able to respond to those policy outcomes. We are also informed, Chairperson, in terms of the strategies that were developing beyond just the delivery agreements and performance agreements as clusters, by the policy direction, the white papers, the national security strategy, the national crime prevention strategy, and all other strategic direction and strategic imperatives of the state. We take all those into account as we develop our strategy as a department. We then take all those chapters and to look into developing strategic priorities of SAPs, which I shall outline in my presentation as we go on, and those will also inform our operational and support imperatives. finally, chapter 10, we develop our strategic plan, capturing all these priorities for the particular period. What we are presenting now is part of the 5-year plan that we started dealing with in the previous year. On the second page, I also highlight, Chairperson, the fact that as we talk to this strategy, we recognize the fact that not only are we dealing with a medium-term strategic framework, but we are also influenced by the fact that the country has adopted a national development plan for 2030. So we need to start saying, in this first 5 years of the national development plan, how do we embrace those imperatives that are sitting there? Below there, we just showed Chairperson that indeed the plan that we'll be looking at, we took into account the NDP priority, we took into account the medium-term strategic framework, the 5 years that we're currently busy with, but we took also into account the program of action of the cabinet. We also took into account, Chairperson, our strategic plan, which we have submitted to the portfolio committee for 2014 to 2019, and we are dealing, as we are current year, with the in-year program, which is the AP, the annual performance plan for 2015 and 2016. That little cloud just shows that this is the second in-year program of the 5-year term. So last year we presented the first leg, we are now in the second leg. On the right hand side, we are just showing that we are dealing with the MPSF 2019, which is 2014 to 2019, and then the others that will follow is from 2019 to 2024, 2024 to 2029, which will then put us back to how we have performed to deal with the priorities that have been laid out for the NDP. Chairperson, in the National Development Plan, there are very clear priorities that have been identified, and they are 13 in number. Of those 13, our portfolio deals with 3 of those. The ones that are marked in blue, that's where the police have a contribution to it. First, at the primary level, in terms of the NDP, we have to contribute towards the priority of building safer communities. That we treat as a primary responsibility as a department, and we believe that if there is any department that has to contribute much, much more, then it is ourselves. The other area is around building a capable state, because we will not be able to contribute towards building safer communities without being a capable department, so we need to ensure that our government, our machinery, our people, our resources are adequate to enable us to do so. Therefore, the whole issue of having a working and capable department becomes very important, so that all other departments will contribute towards building a capable state. Thirdly, Chairperson, our focus in terms of the 13 priorities of the NDP is around promoting accountability and fighting corruption. We are one of the departments that are playing a key role in that regard. Let me then shift, Chairperson, to the 14 outcomes that are linked to the NDP. So the NDP has those 13 priorities, but are very specific outcomes that are appointed in terms of the NDP. We find the responsibility of police in about 4 of those outcomes. The first one is outcome 3, where the NDP is talking about all people in South Africa are and feel safe. And that is found in chapter 12 and 14 of the NDP. We do have a very significant role to play in that regard. On slide 7, we also show that we make a contribution significantly to outcome 12, an efficient and development-oriented public service purpose. The issues that you mentioned this morning, how do we ensure that there is equitable access even to areas that are underdeveloped and that they are able to receive policing services. We also chairperson contribute to outcome 14, which talks to creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. We talk to those aspects in terms of our cross-border policing, our transnational policing. We do address those in our strategic chairperson. On issues of nation building, social cohesion, we believe that a safe and secure country would be better at building cohesion and nation building, and therefore we believe that the police have a contribution to make to that sub-outcome. On slide number 8, chairperson, we then now zoom into the sub-outcome that we said is primary. The sub-outcomes that talk to the fact that all people in South Africa are safe and feel safe. We talk to what is it that we are focusing on to ensure that people in South Africa are and feel safe. And in that regard, first and foremost, we focus on reducing levels of contact crime. Secondly, we are focusing on, together with other departments, on ensuring that there is an efficient and effective criminal justice system. So as a council, we work together to ensure that we achieve that. In terms of sub-outcome 1, we think we are primarily involved in that space. Thirdly, together with other departments, we are working on ensuring that South African borders are effectively defended, are protected, secured, and well-managed. And this is where the Border Management Agency comes in, where there are multiple departments participating in there, and we are a significant role player there. Fourthly, chairperson, to deliver the safe feeling of safety to the citizens, who are also focusing on the emerging crime area, which is a cyber space. We are working with all other law enforcement agencies and to ensure that the secure cyber crime, we're working with NICOP, Defense Intelligence, ourselves, ICA, and others to ensure that we deal with our contribution towards the space through our crime intelligence and other subdivision schemes. Domestic stability is also another important area. Indeed, ensuring that we contribute towards that through our public order and many other CI and other environments, we play a role in the sub-outcome too. Corruption in the public and private sector and even within the department in an area that we also focus upon. So all those chapters are sub-outcomes that are sitting in that outcome that talks to all people of South Africa are safe and feel safe, and we capture those in our plan that we're presenting to you. And then chapters in slide 9. Looking to the constitutional and legislative mandate that informs our plan. First, we look at our mandate in terms of section 2053. We can remove that A, I think it's a mistake. That mandate requires us to prevent, combat, and investigate crime. It further requires us to maintain public order. It requires us to protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property. It requires us to uphold and enforce the law. We also focus, chairperson, in terms of the strategy to ensure that the implementation of that constitutional remit is done by taking into account several provisions of the Constitution, as in section 195, because that section then dictates to us the values and principles that are required for us to govern and administer such as the activities of the department. So we take that into account as we plan. We also recognize that there's an array of applicable legislation, powers and functions that influence us, and we take those into account. And finally, chairperson, we take into account the such policies, our SOPs, our instructions, and many others, as well as our code of conduct and the tools that we're using for performance management. On slide 10, chairperson, Can you just summarize the strategic planning consultation process that it is informed, as I've been indicated, by the ruling party manifesto, the MTSS strategic goals, the national development plan, and that is in summary 2030. We also take into account the president's state of the nation pronouncement, which I will refer to just now, the key ministerial priorities that have been outlined by our minister, the leadership consultation initiatives which are sitting there, because you can't plan in a cocoon, you have to engage with the leadership so that we can have consensus in terms of that which informs our strategy, that which we are leading, that which we are guiding. And for that reason, Chairperson, we are using a number of forums, what we call the Dumelang sessions, the guide sessions, that's how we engage with the leadership. We have the SASPOC 1500 management, where we meet as the total leadership of the organization, from the station right up to myself. We have the management consultation forums that we have. Those inform the leadership participation in structuring of our strategy. Operationally, Chairperson, we also use the deliberation that we have with the Board of Commissioners, which is sanctioned by the Constitution, that I must meet with the Commissioners that are leading the provinces. We meet the structure of the governance of the police, and we meet in very regulated, structured fashion each bi-month. And then we also meet at the top management structure of the organization, the LMS, which combines all the divisional commissioners and the provincial commissioners to discuss and lead the strategic session of this organization. We also meet as myself and the Deputy National Commissioner, that is the SEF, the Senior Executive Forum, where we also meet to discuss the strategic deliberations around policing. When we present this strategy to the Chairperson, we also call a very special strategic work session. Last year it was held in August 2014 to prepare for this strategy session and to look at where we have been and where we are going. So there is a very robust forum in which leadership engage to talk about the organization's strategy, to talk about the organization's performance, to embrace feedback that we are getting from the various environment. On slide 11, Chairperson, I then go to say, it's one thing to plan strategy, but it's another to operationalize strategy. At an operational level, Chairperson, we are also using various forums to ensure that we engage on how we deal with leaders, on how we then implement the strategy. In this regard, Chairperson, I wish to refer this committee to our National Crime Combating Forum, where we bring all the role players in terms of crime combating initiatives in the provinces, nationally, and that is chaired by the DNC for policing. We also have what's called Provincial Crime Combating Forums, which are made up of the Deputy Provincial Commissioners, the cluster commanders in the stations, those are chaired by the provincial commissioners. We have what we call the cluster crime combating forums, and those are chaired by the cluster managers. And the station crime combating forums, those are chaired by the station commanders. So even at an operational level, there is a lot that we're doing in that space. We continue, Chairperson, to take into account our performance management and our accounting platforms. In this regard, we are very advanced with our program with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. Firstly, there are transversal indicators, performance indicators that all departments should contribute to us. I participate in the FOSAT platform, and where we evaluate how we are all doing with those all those selected transversal performance indicators. So on those, I'm able to come back to my team to show how we're doing and how we deal with those. In that environment, you also find things such as the impact, where each of us as departments are being measured on how we are implementing the strategies, how we are planning our strategies. And I want to say to this committee, we have improved significantly as a South African Police Service. We've moved from a position 27 in the previous performance to a position 12, which shows that all these issues that I'm mentioning are starting to yield positively. We also are looking at how we will be measuring the field aspects of this indicator, and together with DPME, we've embarked on the citizen-based monitoring program to look at how the community is feeding them in terms of their own perceptions. We've also recently embarked on a partnership with GCIS, the Government Communications Department, where we commissioned, using the platform of tracking perception, the GCIS tracking research for crime and safety and security services. So that's another platform that we will be using. You will see down there, I talk about the victims of crime survey, because we also use that report to look at the feedback and look at how we embrace the feedback that comes from those environments. Chairperson, we've also engaged on through the frontline service delivery project with communities and businesses, because we're saying, as you have indicated in your opening remarks, the station is the pinnacle of our services. So we're looking through the frontline service program that we've embarked upon. The pilot is doing extremely well, and we're hoping that as soon as we finish with the pilot program that is focusing on about 9 stations, to roll out to the next 100, so that we can start looking at those selected indicators that we've prioritized to ensure that each station must, at the very minimum, do all those selected indicators. We'd be willing to share some place that is delivery project with this committee when time allows you to enter it. We also take into account all recommendations that you give us and the report on those we embrace them in our strategic planning. We take into account the recommendations and suggestions that come from the audit committee, our internal audit chairperson, our inspectorate, the auditor general's findings and recommendations, all those we embrace in our planning chairperson. On slide 11, I just show the circle in terms of planning. Right now we are on the green on February, the last part of it. The project is the strategic plan, chairperson, which is what we presented to you last year for the 5 years. And then here we come in with our annual performance plan, because we then focus in that particular in year. And then we submit to this committee also our costing based on all those. The time that is sitting there just shows how we navigate through that process, but where we are sitting now, we are sitting in February, where we are cabling to yourselves all those three aspects, our strategy, our APD, as well as the budget that we are proposing. As soon as we finish the part chairperson, we go straight into the what I call the form part, where we start talking, dealing with implementation of the strategy once it's once approved, as well as reporting. We submit quarterly reports in terms of each of the aspects that we need to report on. We also produce an annual report. We will be here in September, chairperson, to present to you how we have performed in the past financial year. We've just closed the financial year. We are consolidating the audit and everything, and hope that in the that September we'll be ready and scheduled to come and present to yourself. This strategy chapter informs our performance agreement as leaders, as well as all those that are supposed to deliver on this chapter. If our performance management is based on this, we will actually be holding a performance management workshop in the next week with everybody to ensure that that which we presented to you gets delivered and can be accounted for. On slide 13, chairperson, I just want to read to
In terms of your presentation, I mean, in terms of the tutorial of institutions for planning, strategic development, consultation, management, The question again arises in terms of the practical provision at station level. If things fall through the crack, where is your net picking up your security, your insurance policy? I just want to get a sense on that. I mean, you've indicated all these, even the consultation with the 1,500 top police, the station commanders two or three times a year. But what is your assurance that those messages, those policies are filtered through to station X and Y in province A and B and C?
I'm going to answer you using a number of platforms, Chairperson. First and foremost, what I said, like all other government departments, whether it's education, whether it's health, your national office, you have a provincial office. We then have what we call, others would call districts, others would call regions. Ours are clusters, because, and then from there you have a station. How it works is that a station, a number of stations are put together, whether they are 8, whether they are 10, whether they are 12, who are reconfiguring this on this. The cluster is like an inspector's office in the education sense. The regional office becomes in the inspector's office, where the TA of care clusters. We're looking for standardization. We're looking for oversight on quality of outcome. We're looking for the cluster to actually make sure that when we talk about SOP 2500, let me call it that, he must make sure that in all these 8 stations, that happens. In terms of localized management, you're having the station commander. The station commander must make sure that all the commanding areas, whether it's visible, whether it's safety, support, where it's whatever, in his unit, in his home, the station functions. So you have layered type of responsibility. When you come to the province, you would have the Deputy Provincial Commissioner, for instance, for operations and for detection. The Deputy Provincial Commissioner for Operations and Detection must work with all the cluster commanders to ensure they understand what the detection strategy is, what the operational strategy is. Then they are able to take it to their stations. Then the station commander is able to do it to deal with it in their own environment. The team that I have here are at national. They are there to do the practical and technical planning, taking all these issues that I've mentioned into account. So I think in terms of our framework, that we're structured in a manner where we're able to deal with strategic planning as well as operational delivery. That's aspect number one. Secondly, Jefferson, we have instituted in the past 2.5 years what we call quality assurance. Why did we institute that? We are saying we have a number of levers that are there to ensure that they give oversight and they assess whether indeed we are delivering on our strategy. You have the AG, which is an external assurer. You have the internal auditor, which is an internal assurer. They are there to choose. You know, the AG comes in and they do something like 28 or 35 stations and generalize their findings. When we instituted the quality assurance, we were saying we do not want one station that does not receive some dedicated oversight in any given year. So what have we done? We've said the AG can come and choose their 35. The internal auditor comes. We do about 245 stations per annum. And we use almost a common framework to say, what is it that we're looking into this station? The inspectorate covers over 700 stations. So if you combine what the auditor general is doing, combine what the internal auditor is doing, combine what the inspectorate are doing, you will see that we're starting to ground cover. Then we introduce something that today, anything that remains, we have what we call factory visits, which are done by the SMS. So all of us, as we are here, have an opportunity based on a checklist, a standard checklist today. When you go into this station, this is what you are going to check. And we all produce reports, and the Combined Assurance Committee sits, which includes the internal auditor, the inspectorate, the ourselves as the DMC to see what is the feedback that we are receiving in terms of our capacity to deliver the strategy. What are the gaps? What do we still have to do? And that informs all those leadership engagements, the operational platforms that I've been talking about. So our internal audit committee is a very active participant in this combined assurance. It's that committee that can be chaired by the chairperson of our internal audit, not by ourselves.
No, because I hear you in terms of the macro approach, but my problem is falling through the cracks in terms of the example I mentioned this morning in the introduction. If, for example, the cluster commander don't do factory visits, the station commander is also office bound, how do you pick it up? It's only in the cycle of the inspectorate, maybe a year or 6 months later. If you don't, for example, have got a functioning community police forum, you're not going to hear from it until, you know, so that is the challenge. So, in terms of closer management, that is my concern. We've got this plethora of 8-9 strategic institutions. But in terms of the complaints we as members get from our voters and our communities is that the problem of close management by station commanders and cluster commanders. Now, what can we do to improve that? I mean, you don't have to, you know, address that now, but I mean, I think for the portfolio committee, it's vitally important because you've got all these high-level institutions looking at strategic and so on, but on the ground, in terms of management day-to-day, look, cluster commander do not do regular factory visits or the station in his area. There must be repercussions. There must be steps taken. If the station commander do not visit satellite police stations clearly, there must be a mechanism to deal with it, or you must ensure that your provincial commissioners do their job.
Chairperson, on that one I just said earlier on, that performance management, it actually covers that list. And it is an area, I've just said we're having a workshop for instance next week to deal with this issue of performance management. Performance management in the state is not very well developed, so we're working on that to ensure that those type of functions, individualized responsibility, individualized accountability is heightened. So I agree with you, Jeff, that we need to give a much bigger focus on that one. And I think also, in terms of where we are taking performance management, we'll be willing at some point to engage with the portfolio committee to walk you through what we're trying to do. And I agree that we need to strengthen our arm in terms of individualized performance management as well as relevant functions for those that are leading us at that individual capacity.
You can continue, Commissioner. Thanks.
Chairperson, I just wanted then to contact the team to talk about the vote that we are responsible for. Today we are presenting vote 23 for the Department of Police, which is on the open side of our planning. We also, as the police, do the same process on vote 7, which are resources allocated by the Treasury to our COVID environment CI, and for that we do a similar process to the GFCI. We shall be presenting this strategy in accordance with what we've done in the past, presenting it according to the 5 financial programs that we are having. The committee is also aware of the fact that we need to complete the process of establishing developing the 6th program, which is the
Commissioner, that is our public or policing moment. Thank you, Commissioner. You can go ahead. You sort it.
Chairperson, we are hoping that when we come back, this program still will be implemented, but it's on call. National Treasury is on board. The migration of what needs to be migrated out of DPCI back to the detective, we are working on that. So DPCI in future will be separated from the other programs and it will be a program 6 under the police vote. On self-working Jefferson, I now go into what you see as strategic priorities, that's the strategy that we're presenting to you. And as you will see, our operational priorities on the left-hand side are crime prevention, public order policy, our responsibility to investigate crime, our responsibility to ensure that there are services that support the investigation of crime, such as SFL and others, and our crime intelligence. So those are the five operational priorities that is identified here present. To deliver those operational priorities, we then identify the support priorities as budgets and resource management, both human and capital, as well as ensuring that we enhance our IT and ICT systems to assist us in policy inclusion. On slide 2, Chairperson, I start now dealing with the strategic outcomes and goals that we've set to ensure that we can deal with all those embraced issues that we have outlined. These outcomes contain various focus areas, Chairperson, and I'm presenting them with as part of the goal statement that I shall be going through, and they form part of our strategic plan, as I said, for this M5-year MTSS. The strategic outcome number one, goal number one for all people in South Africa feeling should be safe and should feel safe. We outline the various goal statements below to say we are going to do the checklist and by providing services that ensure that the communities are safer, and how are we going to do that? Through the indicators and targets that you'll be hearing, Jefferson, we are planning in this regard to reduce the number of all serious crimes, including contract crimes. And we are underscoring including contract crimes because when we look at our statistics, it is clear that contract crimes are a very stubborn area that together with the communities we need to work on, because as we have indicated in our various presentations, these are crimes that we come as police after the fact. So we need to ensure that we look at our prevention, our community outreach processes to start ensuring that we connect our abilities with those that can assist us to really tackle this stubborn area. We seek their presence to increase activity to prevent and combat crime, including cross-border crime, while focusing on promoting community participation. Also, we are seeking to, through our community participation outreach, to support the President's call to take government to the people. In this regard, I may just say that when we went to the last cabinet of Hotel, we were quite proud to see that our deputy minister was a top performing minister in this regard, together with our minister and the police leading in terms of community participation, because we cannot police without partnering with the communities. We also, Chairperson, are focusing on partnership policing, and here we are talking about mutual leveraging on capacities and resources. We work very closely with those that are seeking to fight crime, and that's where we have partners such as SABRIC, Old Mutual, Consumer Goods Council, CSIR. There are many, and I'll talk a little bit about them later. We deal with them in our presentation. We seek to increase the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for all serious crimes, and again, including contact crimes. We seek Chairperson to increase the detection rate for all serious crimes, and particularly contact crimes, including organized crime and crimes against women and children. Strategic goals, outcome-oriented goals 2, Chairperson. We're looking at contributing to a peaceful and secure, stable Africa. And that we are going to do through Jefferson, deployment of sub-members as and when our cabinet defines and requires us to do so, like we did recently in the Sutu, like we're doing in Sudan and other areas. We plan to do so by enhancing relations with the Southern African Regional Police Chief Cooperation, SACCOM. We are very active members and we are currently also chairing that portfolio, and indeed we find that our cooperation in fighting crime in the region is yielding positive results. We also, Chairperson, shall do so through Interpol participation. You would also know that we have a unit for Interpol within SAPS, who are an active participant in the regional bureau of our Interpol, and in that regard we are also gaining a lot of benefit in terms of our cross-border policy initiative. We are participating, Chairperson, in a structure that is being established through the AU, AFRIPOL, where we are looking at having a structure such as Europol in the entire continent. So we are very active participants there, and as Chair of SATCO, I currently represent the region in terms of the processes of developing as AFRIPOL structure. We are actively addressing transnational crime. And we're also involved, Chairperson, in a number of binational and multinational engagements that seek to fight crime in the SADC, in the AU, in Greece, and there are a number of country-to-country bilateral where we're working on fighting crime. Chairperson, for this outcome related to what's called in goal 3, we're looking at an efficient, effective, and developmental-oriented public service. How are we going to do this, Chair? We're looking at improving service delivery quality and access. You've mentioned the issue of access. The sub-areas that we will focus on, we're looking at implementation of the frontline service delivery program, where we're looking at enhancing the station as a delivery platform. We're looking at improving access to police services, and we're using a number of modalities. The police station that we're building, which is a slow process, the mobile unit, which will be able to reach out to the communities in those rural areas, ensuring that we can work with traditional communities and even malls and other platforms to have contact points. We are also looking at victim support facilities in our stations, as well as ensuring that these victim support services are accessible to various communities. Secondly, Jefferson, we are looking at a public service department that is identified as a career of choice, because we will always need police in the country. How are we doing that, Jefferson? We have implemented the recruitment to retirement strategy. So we're looking at all processes from recruitment to succession planning to promotion to career passing right up to retirement. So that strategy has been put together and we're starting to implement part of it, part of which is a recruitment strategy, the reverse recruitment strategy that we've shared also over and over again in various platforms. We're also looking at career passing. We're looking at a number of areas to ensure that we become an area where people can see possibilities of advancing careers in the police and get referred as a result. Thirdly, Chairperson, we're looking at sufficient technical and specialized professional skills. How are we doing so? In our strategy, we are dealing with the implementation of our training provisional plan. Each environment has to put together a training provisional plan, and we monitor whether the plan has been implemented by each of those environments, and we use that tool also to continuously evaluate the needs of the various areas within staff. We're also using external, local, and international training interventions and partnerships. Some of the bilateral partnerships that we're having with various countries come with training offerings where we are able to send our police for training in China, in the US. Recently we sent a group of cluster commanders to China. We're also checking and identifying programs that have that international exposure. For instance, for the first time, we have enrolled a few of our lieutenant generals, our digital commissioners, to a VET leadership, executive leadership program. They'll be exposed to training in institutions such as Harvard. They do it with VET, but they're able to be exposed to those type of environments. So there are a number of things that we're doing in that regard, Jefferson, to in partnership training. I can also, for instance, indicate that in terms of our frontline service delivery, Old Mutual has come on board. They've offered us their business training institute where they're training our station commanders in terms of management and leadership, and those are the leadership issues that you are referring to. We're working with the Belgians, for instance, to train our cluster commanders through the University of Pretoria, where our cluster commanders are receiving training, again, on management and leadership, to start saying it's okay to be a good police, but also be addicted with the management and leadership principles. We also can refer to the chairperson that through the Power Academy, the intake, the training that we're having there, the work that we're doing with UNISA, and the licensing of UNISA. We're starting to do well in that area, and we're very grateful for the support that we're also receiving from the private sector. The financial model that we're using there is that we provide the training, we provide the accommodation, and then the tuition. At first year level, the students contribute because we want them to be committed towards the training. So they do contribute a tuition, which is about 12,000. All we have is come on board, realizing the duty and the success that we're making and the performance of these students. On second year, they gave full budget of tuition for the students, which is good for us because it motivated the students even more. But we continue to encourage them at first year to contribute something so that they can be committed towards the training that we're having. And they performed extremely well. We had a 98% pass rate, 97% pass rate on the first intake. We're also implementing tests on the internship, the learnership, the artisanship programs. We've just, in terms of our garages that are giving us programs, we've just taken over, was it 51 artisans that we trained for last year. We've absorbed them. We're taking in new ones in the internal audit phase. We just enrolled new 65. There are talks that we are with the deputy minister in some other areas where we're looking at internships and internships. So also we're using that to build our sufficient technical and specialized professional skills. We are also developing and heading towards implementing a lateral or cross-wide recruitment program. There are many students that are trained in BA policing, BTEC in policing, some criminology, law and all this, and we're looking at how we can look at that lateral absorption of those type of students who are graduated and out there and give them a one-year training in policing and be able to use them in the police. So that program is also being looked into, and we believe that it will help us also to gain more diverse skills in the police service. Jefferson, we also look at using efficient and effective management and operation systems to ensure that we start improving this leadership, this governance, and the efficiency of the organization. And then we're looking at institutionalization of governance management principles and processes, and developing also our sub-technology strategy. And this is where I'm saying it's starting to yield, because if you look at our MPEG performance, it's starting to see that governance that we're starting to instill. We are measured also on that, and I think we're starting to perform a little bit better as an organization. Procurement systems and deliver value for money, an area that we're also looking into. Firstly, we're aligning the self-procurement processes with the government turnaround strategy, because government has embarked on a mega turnaround strategy procurement. We're aligning our processes towards it. We have reported to this policy that we have separated, because of the size and sheer intensity of the two environments, FDM and facilities management functions, and the purification is going on, and with the separation is very, very, very advanced, and the two units are separate. I've introduced the leaders of the various environments here. And then the issue of buying intelligently and buying well will be presented to this committee, the work that we are doing with CSIR to assist us in this space. We also are looking in this space, Chairperson, to what improved mechanisms to prevent corruption in the public service, within ourselves and elsewhere. What we have done in this space, Chairperson, very advanced, with the establishment of a dedicated integrity management capability. We have a division that is dealing with that. We've just trained 20 ethics officers, Chairperson, with the first 30 ethics officers have been trained, so we are afoot in terms of dealing with it within SAPS itself. Looking at, we have advanced in terms of the implementation of financial disclosure framework, so e-disclosure is run by DPSA, who are participating in that. We are also preparing, Chairperson, advancing the vetting of service providers. We are also looking at prioritized areas of vetting. We would like everybody to be vetted, but we prioritize like certain areas. FCM is one of those. We would like to put our efforts, you know, in that area and prioritize that and ensure that our FCM employees are vetted. We are also looking at ensuring that as we recruit Chairperson, we deal with vetting at source, if I may put it that way, and ensure that we recruit the right people. We've implemented with all our recruitment programs what we call grooming camps. These students spent 3 weeks, 2 weeks, where we really dedicated just to looking at their attitude, their honesty, their integrity. That is special. We, you know, they go through the normal courses and all other things, checking their qualifications, but we take 2 weeks with them live to look at all those type of issues. And we realized that since we started this grooming camp a year ago, we are starting to be assured that issues relating to improved mechanisms of corruption in the public service could be assisted by similar processes. Also looking at strengthened accountability, I've already touched on piloting the institutionalization of institutionalizing the citizen-based monitoring and customer perception surveys, as I've already indicated, and the GCI aspects that we are doing. The other area, Chairperson, that we are addressing in our strategy is nation building and social cohesion, and that is goal 4, and how will we be giving those? Firstly, we are saying knowledge of the Constitution and fostering constitutional values. This is an inward looking process, Chairperson. We are doing a lot around ensuring that we dialogue, we engage, we talk about these constitutional principles, these constitutional remedies that we are having, and that we all can understand it. We are looking at processes that are saying we must go beyond just reciting our code of conduct, but looking at how we live and use it as a tool for delivering our services. Issues of demilitarizing police, we are into a number of activities. We are dialoguing, we are looking at professionalization from various angles. So we are also having multiple programs in that area to deal with that output which is sitting in the NDP. We are also engaging communities in terms of the Chairperson. In terms of the frontline service delivery, we don't have issue a charter and say this is a charter that goes to each station. It's community consultant. When we say there is a charter in Kabokweni in terms of the new frontline service delivery, we have met with the various factors in the province to, in that area to say, what is it that you would like to see as an outcome and a service from the body? And that is then printed into a charter for that particular issue. Chairperson will also do that by equalizing opportunities and promoting inclusion and redress. We are seeking to implement a broad-based inclusive transformation agenda by promoting women empowerment and development. And indeed, we are seeking an average of 34.7 for women and even in the senior level structures. One is happy that we're starting to introduce leaders in the lieutenant in the divisional commissioner space. So the issue of women empowerment remains high on our agenda. The empowerment of marginalized individuals, we must ensure that you know, our demographics are talking to the demographics of the country. We're also taking into account that in some of the areas we're starting to see marginalization in the minority groups, but we're also looking at that. If I look at our intake for this year, I'm quite happy in terms of this new intake that is going to start now. I saw a very good spread of the other sectors of the community that we were starting to see a shortage of. The employment of disabled people, even though we're a challenged environment, we also remain giving focus on that and putting most of the people in our support space. In this case, Chairperson, we're also looking at promoting active citizenry and broad-based leadership. In this regard, Chairperson, we're looking at integrated approaches of building community safety, because indeed, the moment that when the police come, it is at the end of anything. When you are called to come and deal with somebody who is on the Nyaupe space, you must know that we are almost at the end of the line. So it's important for us to look back to say, how do we work with the schools, how do we work with churches, how do we work with the community, how do we ensure that that integrated community safety is taken into account. Community participation therefore becomes very important. Issues of community police forums, their roles, their leadership becomes important. The utilization of relevance as a volunteer and force multiplier becomes very important. I just want to refer lastly to say we also use strategic partnerships to promote active citizenry, and maybe if we can go there just to show some of the partners that we're having there. You know, as you can see there, we have established the Banking Association. We work very closely with them. They share their intelligence. We have a dedicated structure where we deal with issues of crime in that area, and we find it very helpful. The Consumer Goods Council, we also work with them because we're looking at the retail industry. The malls were starting to be informed quite in advance when the malls are going to be developed. You would have noticed last year when we had a mall crime, they were very instrumental in working with us in this area. So the inner perimeter of those retail spaces, we're able to work with them to deal with issues of shoplifting. So there's a lot of support we get there. We also have a partnership, for instance, Crime Line, with Crime Media, Ojacom is coming on board on our crime soap. We will report as soon as we've made that progress. So reporting of crime to ensure that there are many, many areas where citizens can access platforms for reporting crime. We have that. The SABC, we've just signed a memorandum of understanding where they are able to assist our provinces. You know, in some of the provinces, they give the premiums, the MECs at least an hour slot. So our police are able to participate with them there, to engage the community and allow the community to fall in with their program. The universities, I've already mentioned that PAL, we operate under the license of UNISA. I've mentioned the University of Pretoria, UPE. We have an academic forum where we dialogue about issues of crime. They share with us their research report and all this. The CSIR, we were in this committee talking about the work that we do with them. The PITAS are very strong. The K53 program is funded as well significantly in terms of those. Touched on all mutual appear in terms of trucks and their safety. So we work very closely with them. The American Tobacco, again, also in terms of trucks and their business of delivering products to the community. The embassy, CFSA, we're meeting tomorrow. We have indicated that we are finalizing our memorandum of agreement. We're signing tomorrow with CFSA on that matter. We've advanced all our discussions in that regard. Liberty Life, AXA, Polmed, so there's a lot of work that we're doing in terms of what we call the strategic partnerships in policy. On slide 19, chapter 5, when we talk about fighting corruption, we're talking about promoting accountability and fighting corruption. And how do we do so? We do so, Chair, by building a resilient anti-corruption system. First and foremost, in our detectives, we have established a unit called the NINO unit, which is looking at investigating special corruption cases external, but they are also our investigation unit for investigating corruption cases within the police. We are looking at investigating DPCI so that they continue with their support. So through this budget, we also ensure that they remain capacitated and they are able to continue to do the work that they have been dedicated to do. The enhancement of discipline and management, there is an agreement that the minister shall be signing as indicated, and we also have those unit general, what we call the trial unit. We have established so that we can have specialist units that are skilled and dedicated. We don't just make, even though we know that this is a non-function, but we want to make sure that the people who are doing that are capable and are able to ensure that we secure the necessary sanctions that are required when we deal with issues of discipline. So the trial units are being rolled out. We strengthen the protection of whistleblowers. We are establishing, and I've already touched on the establishment of an integrity management capability, and we're encouraging timeless reporting of the corruption-related activities. We're also working with the call centers such as the presidential call center, the public service call center, where issues that are relating our environment are concerned. The public protector also sends a lot of inquiries, and we do deal with those. We also look at strengthening accountability as part of the fighting corruption chairperson. And in that regard, we're looking at the institutionalization of the code of conduct and minimizing conflict of interest through financial disclosure. I must say the SIU is starting to come back. That e-disclosure activity that I've spoken about of DPSA, we're now getting reports where they will tell us that so many of the police are involved in tenders in Department Y and Z, and this is how much is involved and what we're dealing with it. We're also getting reports such as the SIU dealing with the municipalities, where some of our members go there and present themselves as indigent, and you find that they've written off their rentals of 100,000, 75,000. So we get those and we're able to use the internal process to recoup those resources back to where they have been lost. So that's the NINO unique and all those issues of strengthening fighting corruption internally and accounting for it. We're also looking at creating a transparent, responsive, and accountable public service. In that regard, we're vetting our contractors, and we're vetting our supply chain personnel. We're streamlining and re-engineering the big procurement processes so that we continue with our, efficient buying processes. We're strengthening the independent quotation structure, and in that regard, we're working very closely with the re-engineering processes that are being undertaken by Treasury. We're looking at the enhancement of the implementation of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. We are having those processes. We seek to improve as we go on. Chairperson, the issues at slide 20 deals with aspects that have been raised through the State of the Nation address. On page 20, those are some of them: reduction of serious crime and issues are mentioned under the subheading of what was referred to in the State of the Nation address, drugs, murder, and all those. Combating corruption was also an aspect that is significantly mentioned in the State of the Nation address, and those are the sub-issues that are indicated, the issues addressing matters of FET, the empowerment of women, the implementation and of the Implement Equity Act, as well as the triple DEE by all departments, youth empowerment, each safety program regarding to combating drugs, and priority of safety in schools have been referred to in the State of the Nation. Domestic stability is one of the areas that have been referred to. Our response to community protests was presented, for instance, in the summity, our plan to revamp our public order policy environment in response to similar priority pronouncements. Regional and continental partnerships are touched on. The SONA also emphasized employment of the people with disabilities and issues also relating to the enhancement of the national infrastructure frame. So we take all those into account. On slide 21, we are just showing by categorization which were the new priorities in the SONA and which were the old ones that we remain looking into. And I shall go to the new ones, where the issue of Telkom as a designated as a lead agency to assist in technology issues, and to that we link our national infrastructure upgrade network project. As part of that, we address it through our strategy. The other one is the Public Administration Management Act, regulating public servants from doing business with the state. I've just indicated what we're doing in terms of those aspects using the MINU and our internal corruption processes. The integrated interventions to combat rhino poaching in the country, we have a priority committee in the net joint. We're participating very actively through DPDI and our detectives to be a partner in that process. And finally, the other new one is the health day of the 10th May, promoting healthy staff lifestyles. We will be having a national health day in the police, working with Paul Nash in that regard. On slide 22, Chairperson, our key ministerial priorities, as articulated by Minister Senko. There are four key priorities: strengthening the criminal justice system, we continue to be in that space, professionalizing the police service. He also underscores the demilitarization of the police service, as well as building safety using an integrated approach, and in that regard, he emphasizes the need for community outreach. Other critical imperatives, Chairperson, that are carried by our strategy involves the modernization of our human resources. I've touched on this. There's an issue around what a single police service is requested by the Constitution. There are a number of sub-activities that were involved with there, an example of which would be the first responder training that we gave to all the Metro Police, and then also even identifying themselves, different bureaus like ourselves, taking their emblems, those that are being trained, making it great. So there are a number of things that we are looking into outside the policy framework, but more on the operational framework. I've mentioned that we're looking at a partnership with FedEx, where we'll be signing a memorandum of agreement tomorrow. The frontline service delivery, the institutionalization thereof, we are focusing on scope in our budget, and the community outreach program. On slide 24, we just show some of the strategies that inform our planning. Like there are many, I won't read all of them, like the national security strategy, our public order policing strategy, the national drug master plan, the mining crime combating forum, all those strategy chapters that are taken into account when we do our planning and present to others. at this juncture, Chairperson, I am going to then move on to say, having given that background, how do we then look at apportioning the resources that are being extended to us? And as I've indicated, that we are still programmatic, and within the programs we show which sub-programs are hitting them, and to deal with that aspect, I am going to then ask General Skeget to take us through that, and then when he is done, we will then move into looking at the various indicator targets that we set for ourselves. And I'm not sure, Chairperson, if you want to proceed,
yes,
ask some questions, and then we continue the financial program.
Thank you, National Commissioner, for your input. We appreciate that. I think at this stage we're going to go to questions, because there's strategic and management issues we must address. We will then hopefully ask the key get General Skeget, depending on the number of questions from the members on. Maybe the first question from my side is, in terms of the approach, in terms of the strategic focus. Now, the President of the Republic is on record that the NDP is our aim. We must achieve that, the Minister as well. One thing that, and I think also the question of professionalization, that's one thing I think the document is a bit thin on that. Just to indicate, for instance, we got the response from the police management in terms of the recommendations of the committee of the previous process. And in terms of the professionalization priorities, there's a few activities that is listed. For instance, the National Commission mentioned now the Paul Academy, the executive management training, the cluster command course, the induction, so on and so on. But in our one action last year, we indicated what is needed really to also ensure that the NDP over the four years that is left is fully implemented, that we need for the committee's purposes to really do a good evaluation in terms of ensuring that the NDP is properly implemented, is the implementation plan with timelines. Because if you look at the current APT as well, on page 2, where you indicate the question of professionalization, is just those 4 points or activities. What they actually asked, I think it was in November or October, was a full implementation plan with timelines of what are the police going to do to ensure that we achieve the issue of professionalization. Of course, the activities you've mentioned, that's fine, but that must be part of a broader approach, a broader implementation plan. And I think that is, that is missing for me in the presentation this morning. But, I mean, of course, you can differ with that view, but that is just one thing that I think we should give special attention to. Other members?
Honourable Malabachi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
You're welcome. Any number.
You made mention of the board of commissioners. Does the constitution say to the establishment of the board of commissioners? And if it does, where in the constitution is that? And my next question is, how will the cluster concept be refined? My next one is, do you intend to establish a national policing board?
Can you just repeat that one?
Do you intend to establish a national policing board?
A national what?
Policing board.
And this was also raised by SAPU. Last year, you committed to a crime reduction of 34%. Crime reduction rate of 64%. It's not. Okay, let me leave it. I'll come back to it. To make sure that the right people are recruited into staff. We hear staff entering into partnership with Sanders. What is the name the skills program. The skills program.
Thank you, Honorable Mulabachi, Honorable Mulula.
Thank you, Chair. My question is to, can you please indicate why various internationally accepted professional policing standards, such as the use of force, are not included in either the subject of conduct or code of ethics? Number two.
Sorry. Can you just repeat that question? Thank you.
My question is, will you please indicate whether the CTS business plan has been developed and approved yet? Whether the strategy plan and application of for the APP of the SARS has been aligned to this business plan? What is the role of SARS in the development of this business plan? Number three, you mentioned public administration and management act. What are you going to make sure that public servants are not doing business with the state? Do you have a strategy? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Welcome, Honourable Ramachakan, and then Honourable Khamilwa.
You Chairperson, thank you. I want to start with slide number 15. Commissioner, you say, I quite agree, the strategic plan is very important, as the Chairperson has said, because that determines your whole operation of the whole police services. And in your slide, as far as your strategic outcomes are concerned on your goal one, you say you're going to increase activities to prevent and combat crime, including the cross-border crime. Now my question is as follows, that yesterday we saw in the presentation from the Institute for Security Studies that there was a Gauteng aggravated robbery strategy, especially in 2009 towards 2010 World Soccer Cup. It was very effective. It consists of 22 specialized investigating units, especially focusing on aggravated robbery, and the statistics show that there was a big decline. Now my question is, you say you're going to increase your activities, but why was this unit being disbanded? I wanted to say disbanded, but that's not the correct word. So I want to know, because it was an effective unit, and why don't we have it anymore? Thirdly, I can also just say, you say you're increasing the percentage of trial ready case dockets for all serious crimes, including contact crime. Now, according to SARP, I said yesterday here that SARP promised the public that it plans to achieve 78.89% trial ready case dockets in 2014-2015. Now it plans to achieve 69.4% trial ready dockets in 2015-2016. This is a reduce of the focus, and I want to know, is Saba telling the truth? If not, correct them, and why the reduction? My further question, Chairperson, is on slide number 70, because you said we can...
Yeah, I'm sure. Welcome,
right. 17. On 7. On your improving service delivery quality and access, you say you're improving access to police services, police stations, mobile units, contact points, victim support facilities and services. But however, Commissioner, there is research done that determined that 33% of the public say they are scared of the police. They actually fear the police. And we also see it in the statistics when it comes to the payout of civil claims. That increased 137% over the last 3 financial years. So, how are you going to deal with that matter in your strategic planning? Specifically on the fear of the people towards the police, they are scared, and the civil claims. And I can assure you, and you know, Most of those civil claims involve the unlawful arrests that actually shows that people are not well trained or something. There's an attitude problem when it comes to that. On the same slide, it's a short question. On your implementing the recruitment and the retirement strategy, I'm not sure because I get some calls from the public and ex-members. Do you still follow the policy of re-employing ex-members who left the services? I know there was a campaign at one stage. Has that been stopped? And if so, why? And I also want to say, Jefferson, it sounds very good. Improved mechanisms to prevent corruption in the public service and the vetting of services providers and everything. What about the vetting of the people itself? We had a vetting process where 1,448 members were found to have criminal records. Can we have an update on that situation as far as how many of those people has been disciplined and left the services? Then, Chairperson, on slide number 19, as you see. No, slide number 18. On your transformation agenda, you said that you're very glad that it seems, and let's talk simple language, that you are very glad to see there are more whites joining the South African Police Service.
But yeah, and of course.
Okay, of course, others, yeah, right. Okay, you're referring to the minority groups. So it's the colors, it's the whites, that's what you said, minority groups.
And the Indians.
And the Indians, yeah, of course, the minority groups. Now I want to ask you, what is the prospect of promotion of those minority groups? Because the problem is, yes, we want them to get our transformation figures correctly, but when it comes to promotion, we say you would be very useful to ensure that the demographics are correct, but when it comes to promotions, I'm sorry. Yeah, that happens. That's there are court cases, General, and you know that. Don't say no. Mm-mm. Can I give you the number? Why don't you want court case? There are many other court cases, and we can go into the demographics. If yes, okay. But then tell your colleague, she must have said, mm-mm. Yeah. Right, then she must give the answer. And if you must give the correct answer, we also I got the statistics.
Let's do the questions.
Okay. Then on the same 18, page 18, the utilization of the reservists. I want really the clear reasons, Honourable Chair, from the Commissioner, why we have reduced the categories, the number of categories of reservists from 4 to 2. And the reason why I ask that, there was a specific category for rural and urban safety. It was the fourth category. That has been removed now. We only have functional and specialized functional category, only the two. The REP specifically refers to rural safety.
NDP, REP is senior bank.
What did I say?
RDP.
Sorry, the NDP. National government. You see, the problem with the government is they have so many plans, I can't remember what they have anymore. Plans and plans, but no one works. So let's go to the latest, the NDP then, as far as that is concerned. Because that is, in the National Development Program, it specifically says that there must be specialized attention when it comes to the rural safety. My last question, Chairperson, is actually on slide number 22. That is about the demilitarization of SAPS. I'd like to hear from the Commissioner how they're going to demilitarize the police service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Pringlewald. Honourable Mabija. Honourable Kuala, are you fine? Are you welcome?
I've got only one question around the IT development strategy within the force. We have one witness to members of the force being killed in the streets. And you know, when you see other companies having video equipment in the past, so which they aim to capture critical evidence into some of the investigations. So we're moving in that direction.
Yeah.
The question is around the IT development system in Kenya for SAPS. As I was saying, you know, in other countries you've got the CAS with video systems on board, which kind of assists in clarifying against the police or the service kind of basis for evidence against the perpetrators. I'm saying the same method of the methods that we've experienced within the police force at the end of criminality. Are we moving in that direction where we, you know, develop more on the high side?
Thank you for that question. Maybe just the indicator, there was a distribution by SAPS management of, you know, matters, and the, you know, the, I think the documents of the National Commission in terms of dealing those issues, it was distributed to them, but I'll just make sure the Secretariat will also do it again. Yes, I saw Honourable Mulapasi and then Honourable Ramaskane.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The question that I've got to you with this. You spoke of grooming camps with the duration of 3 weeks. Okay. Now my question is, are they yielding the intended results? And can you share with us some of the findings in this grooming camp? My last one is, you have a huge bottleneck in the inspector's running promotion. A cop could even gave us a figure of 56,000. How are you addressing this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Rakhlani, you will be the last one for this round.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and the Commissioner. I want to say that the first of all that we value the work that the police are doing. We know that it's a very important function in our society. It's a very important to our constitution to make sure that the will of the constitution remains intact. So when we engage with it, it must be in that context, understanding that context. The question that I just want to ask, haven't perused briefly your APT and strategic, it just helps me to understand the broad policing perspective. The minister speaks about the almost like a people oriented policing plan, which is different than the militarization aspect. Now I want to ask that question in context that when you read some of your MTSF objectives or program is speak about war on crime. Because they're declaring war on crime. Mm-hmm. Now the concept of itself of declaring war, because narrowly speaking here, the people who commit crime are brothers and sisters and everybody that is part of our society. So the hate of how do we deal with the crime, we were talking that particular language in the context of people oriented policing, which is a problem solving policing. I just want to understand is it a slippage of language or is it a shorthand? Or is it really the actual planning? Because that language does not differ from the language of militarization. It's more or less at the flip side of the coin. Whereas when you look at what the National Crime Prevention Strategy speaks differently to that. So I just want to really to get that understanding from the police, whether there is a, because in terms of the policing priorities, the minister comes up with those policy priorities, and of course that informs the operational that you put in place. So when you change the language, it gives a particular meaning and expression to those who are practitioner on it. And the second question that I just want to ask the is the I hear that but the second one is the in relation to the combating of corruption. I think must compliment always the the strategy to combat crime, I mean to combat corruption in the police. And I think the issue about the new recruit strategy in dealing with that, I think is must compliment the police for that. But you know, the major problem with the issue of corruption, the issue for me I want to understand is the big pool or the strategy in dealing with the 200,000 of it. Because if you're focusing at the entrance part of it, is a tinkering. The actual, the body of it is the most one that concerns in terms of dealing with the body. Those already in there, already in service, the strategy that deals with that particular aspect. And thirdly, the CJS business plan. I just want to understand the incorporation, whether the CJS business plan is already incorporated in the AVP going forward. Given an approval going forward in terms of the integration. The fourthly, in the document, I think it's the 5-year strategic plan. It's on the statement, objective statement, in terms of the reduction of crime, it's there of 2%. They will reduce it by 2% from that volume. And I look at the volume, some of them is 171,000. So I ask the question, what informed the 2%? Why 2%? The old figure has always been 7%. So this one is slightly retreating. Does it give indication of ability to combat it to lower level than 2%? Is it the fictitious approach to it? What informs it? I just want to understand what informed the 2%. Why not 7%? Particularly if you're really going to combat it. And I think both in page 22 and page 24, when you read the strategic plan, it talks about that, which means we're gearing ourselves to 2% reduction. Now I want to ask, is that good enough in terms of the investment, in terms of what we're doing with them, what the capacity that we have? The budget. I know we're going to speak about that in the, but the I just want to understand was when you talk about the specialized crime, particularly when you deal with the issue about the hawks, you don't speak about in terms of that high level in terms of that. I just want to understand the requirement of 17.5 in terms of the budget aspect of it. How are you dealing with that aspect of the hawk budget process? Remember the amendment of the legislation spoke about ring-fencing. Mm-hmm. Spoke about ring-fencing of that. I just want to understand before you get into that, in terms of the perspective, in terms of getting to that, how are we dealing with that particular aspect? We will come to the budget to deal with the partnership issue. You would remember, General, we did say that when we come to the issue about actually what the partnership needs in terms of that list of focus area, we'll get into a specific discussion around budgeting, itemized budgeting around some of those partnerships. So for that, I think we want to get into in a minute. Chair, I would leave it there for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will take a 10-minute break, a tea cup of break, and then we'll come back for the responses. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the hospital. On your conscience, right? which
I'm
Takes place because
You have the strategic platform where we are meeting as divisional commissioners and planning our work, but the operational leadership is given at the province by the provincial commissioners. So that interface is very crucial, and I think the act was spot on to subject. There was a question around the clusters. Okay, let me come to the question of the clusters, which is a second question. Your third question was around the National Policing Board. SAFS does not establish the policing forum. So those forums, it is the remit of the Secretariat. Our issue is to ensure that once they are established, we work with the policing forum. And where they need some support from us, maybe needing transport to do certain things, or they may need some office to do particular things, we as police always do those type of things. But that is the remit of the Secretariat, not the remit of Then there's an issue around the indicators on the reduction of crime by 44% on SAPU. I think it's a very specific issue. Talks to the detective side of the indicators. Let me ask him on the story to talk to that one.
Members, thank you. This particular submission talks to the reduction of trial ready case dockets. And out of these, we've got more than one indicator. This particular indicator, they are sitting at different levels. We've got 36. And then we've got one on slide 77. We also got one on slide 78, 82, 81 and 82. I think the figure that SAPU relates to is only sitting on the commercial crime one. That does not reconcile with any of the figures for this particular slide. There's nowhere trial ready targets are dropping down. All of them. They are moving on.
Thank you. Moving on. Thank you. All right. Chairman, the other question that was asked was around refinement of clusters. Firstly, let me say, when it comes to issues of clusters, I want to relate this to the project that is sitting in the JPPS cluster undertaken by the Department of Justice. They are moving from magisterial areas to municipal areas demarcation. They shift in the court in that space. So all of us in the JCPS cluster have to align with those processes. So some of our clusters are sitting in particular magisterial areas and have to be, you know, migrated towards this refined municipal areas. That's issue number one. Second, when we establish our clusters and regions, we didn't take into account standardization. You'll find that some clusters have 4 stations, some have 6, some have 12, some have 14. So we're looking at how we ensure that as we refine to fit ourselves into these municipal boundaries, we also bring in standardization in terms of weight of those clusters and all that. That's the way that we're currently busy with. It's not changing this whole thing, it's just reorganization in terms of those 2 or 3 key parameters. Okay. Then the SAPU asked a question around the SAADF program. We are looking at various the SANDF program and recruitment, I don't know how they link those two, because in SANDF, what we are using is their executive development program. They have a very helpful executive development program, which runs for 6 months, and we've been sending our leaders there. So we're looking at various programs that are available to ensure that we continuously train our leaders. The only thing that I can relate to in terms of this LADF program is that one, but it's an executive development program which runs for 6 months for some of our members to go there. Okay. Honorable Mona, the questions you asked was around the CGLS and how the business plan, whether our business plan, you know, talks to them and the role of staff. I just want to read out, you know, the 7 key parameters of the CGLS. And there are some that affect us directly, there are some that don't. The first one is strengthening the criminal justice system. So all of us that are in this criminal justice system are required that we work together to strengthen this, because they are saying without that strength, we are not going to have an efficient justice system. The second one talks to about make the police service professional. I may just read that paragraph. They say a professional police service is essential for a strong criminal justice system. We propose linking the police code of conduct and the code of professionalism to promotion and as well as disciplinary regulations. Recruitment should attract competent professionals through a project system. So if you have had our strategy, it's dealing with a number of those issues. It's dealing with recruitment. It's dealing with professionalization. It's dealing with the code of conduct, institutionalizing those type of issues. So that's one pillar that in the criminal, 7 pillars of the criminal justice system affects the police directly and we're dealing with it. The third one deals with demilitarize the police service. The paragraph says that the decision to demilitarize the police force moving away from its history of brutality. That's where this demilitarization is coming in. And it's a key goal to transformation after 1994. The remilitarization of the police in recent years has not garnered greater respect for police officers and as well as higher conditions. If anything, it has boosted violence in the service and seen an increase in murders of police. The coalition believes that the police should be demilitarized to turn the force into a civilian police service. We also address those issues in our strategy. The fourth pillar talks to building safety using an integrated approach. That's where all of us participate, including the communities. I won't read that one. And then it talks about building community participation and community service in this. So I've touched on a number of issues that are influenced, that are driving this CJS plan, and we are definitely addressing those in the strategy as I indicated this morning. The issue of the Public Service Management Act, declaration of interest and all those, I think we are covering this. We've also articulated the fact that we as the police service have established an integrity unit, that we've changed the search, change ethics in that unit, the first 20 ethics commissioners, so we are on course in the trial units that we're re-establishing is part of ensuring that we deal with issues that are raised in the Public Service Management Act. Honorable Kuna, about the first one that you raised was the issue of the helping, and I would underscore the helping aggravated robbery strategy, not a cut. Aggravated robbery strategy. That was a strategy that was developed by the MEC in the province. So it wasn't a strategy that was sitting in SAPS, but we are keen to look at that and look at what was sitting there. I don't think we disbanded it from the SAPS point of view. We never had that type of a unit, but we are keen to look at that and see what are the benefits that came out of that, and then we can inform ourselves out of that. But ordinarily, I think there are many other approaches that are taking place okay, to ensure that these issues of aggravated robberies are dealt with. A case in point is the presentation that you received as a committee of the collaboration between SAPS and the what we call it, the Consumer Goods Council. A case in point is also the active work that we're doing with SAPS in terms of dealing with those aggravated robberies, and we're seeing good progress in some of those. The issue of trial ready droplets reduction. That's the one that the general story. Yeah, the as I related to it earlier on, I think maybe Sarko might have used a total calculation, but if I take the slides that I mentioned, if you calculate an average, the target is higher. They might have used a single slide, but none of in all the slides except one. So our trial-based target is between 10 to 20. Thank you. What I will also maybe request, Honorable Kulova, that after they presented the indicators, maybe let's see if that question has been substantially answered, then we will be able to deal with it.
Honorable Kulova?
No, if I can respond. I mean, I do have here the annual performance plan 2015-2016 from the police. And it is quite clearly percentage of trial ready case lockers for crime dependent on police actions for detection. It gives the figures. And well, the figure given here, it says for the estimated performance for 2014-15 was set at 64.5%. Then it says the medium term targets, it's 65.04 for 2016-17, 65.09. So we're seeing them increasing. The targets were 0.01 or 2 or 3%. Oh, what a target. And that's your
document. No, I don't display the document. But the principle, there's an increase, let's create the range of issues and they will address it. I think the reason I answered the question is that it did not decrease. It had increased. Then we had... It is not a decrease. Yes, it's an increase. So Sapu's statement on that basis is not correct. Thank you. I use the rate of increase. Okay. And then the other question, Honorable Kulova, was around issues of the access, the research that has taken place, 77%, 33% indicated that they fear. The flip side of that coin is that 77% of the population are not fearing the police, which is a positive statement. And I'm going to answer to give you some of the issues we're doing to ensure that we also tend the 33% to join the 77% who are not fearing the police. But you said 33% fear the police, which in fact means 77% do not fear the police. If I'm using your own figures.
The figures are great. But must I say, I'm a bit worried about the response from the commissioner.
I'll let you finish then. Okay. I started off by saying 67, you don't fear the police. 33, fear the police. And I'm saying to you, what are we doing to ensure that we deal with the 33?
Okay.
Yeah. No, they corrected me if I can get 67 and 83. And let me say what we are doing. We're not sitting and saying there is 67 that is perfectly sufficient. We would like to have an optimal number. So what are we doing? We're doing a lot of work around community outreach because it's important for us to work with communities. And what is seen in those communities? We're starting to say, rather than being reactive, intervening at police when crimes have already happened. We're running, you know, programs such as the school safety program with the deputy minister, going to the schools and ensuring that police, each school is linked to a police station, but not only that. We ensure that in those schools we're running a program where we're saying at least four police should be linked to that particular school. And why should they be linked to that particular school? They must be part of the safety committee, which is made up of many role players in the community. But what is important for us is to discuss crime, but also to build awareness, build prevention programs. Our police should be there at least four times a year to declare health education school and BA and all those. That's one part. We go out on particular programs, different ones, whether it's violence against women and children, whether it's around use of dangerous weapons, whether it's around second-hand goods. There are a lot of community initiatives that are undertaken to ensure that we can get a community, a time-savvy community that is able to join hands with us and are able to ensure that we push back crime. We also look at, you mentioned issues related to civil claims. Yes, it is an area we are battling with. But in that area also, we're doing a lot of work in terms of our own internal process to start saying, let's analyze these civil claims. What are the causes of these civil claims? What sort of remedies do we need to bring forward in terms of our own police, you know, wrongful arrest and all those? Because you will always have been civil claims in the police, but we can reduce them. We're also looking at other very concerning issues. I mean, we're starting to see police being turned into almost a road accident fund with a lawyer counting outside our own gates. I raised this matter at the National Efficiency and Effectiveness Forum of the Chief Justice last weekend to start saying there is a certain conduct also by the legal practitioners, because I think there's also collusion between the victims, the lawyers, and some of our police, and those are areas that we're looking into, because it's almost looking like a money-making scheme that we need to deal with. So we have gone seriously into those processes. We produce a monthly litigation report. We have introduced forensic auditing into those claims. We are looking at contract-related issues to deal with all those type of issues. So they are very important to us, and there's a lot of work that has been done in that regard. You then, Honourable, ask a question around issues of reenlistment. Yes, indeed, we do participate in reenlistment. We haven't stopped it, but it's got to be good people that we reenlist, because we've invested in those skills. If they are available and idle, we will reengage those leads, because it takes time to train police, and some of the police officers are leaving because they are having debts and financial challenges. They're not leaving because they don't like policing. So we're able to go out, we have a certain process of enlisting, but we seriously vet them because we don't want to absorb people who are not going to be helpful to the organization. So our HR is very active in terms of dealing with those issues. The vetting of staff, very high up on the agenda. You would recall that Dr. Zulu from our crime intelligence was invited to this committee to present to this committee our re-engineered and accelerated vetting program. The needs are wide, and therefore we have prioritized some areas to say, whilst we want to vet everybody, not just at an entry level, and ensure that the system is embedded whereby we concurrently continue to, as my certificate acquires, I go to vet and all that type of thing. So we're dealing with it. But what I have mentioned in our strategy is that there are certain vetting platforms that we had to prioritize. We indicated when we were here that we started with the leadership to say all SMS must be vetted. And as requested by Cabinet, the team that is here of the Lieutenant General, we do not vet ourselves. We're vetted by SSA. The unit that we have with CI and every other person in the environment. We've prioritized areas such as procurement, because it's a very critical area. So we prioritize also that as we say, everybody should be vetted, we need to do other things. We're also looking at what else do we have to do to capacitate the vetting of to accelerate our vetting program. We know that we can't even leverage on SSA because we are there to vet all other people in the organization. So it's a very challenging situation for all of us. But we've accelerated that, we've trained people, we've appointed more people in that space, and we are, of course, and we shall continue to give feedback in that regard. Then...
Honourable, sorry, Commissioner,
and you get specific on this issue, I understand the process and theory and all that. Can we get figures, please, to say how many people have been vetted now? Because we had the audit process up till 2011, and then they found 1,448. And what is this issue? My question was also specifically, how far are we with those people? Because there are criminal records and what happened with them. Specifically on this point. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. The 1,448, let me again give context. The police, through Mr. Tetman, Deputy Minister that is here, took a voluntary process of assessing this, of auditing this. 1448 is a product of a voluntary process that says we want to attend to this letter into the organization. And I think for this we would want to really say we thank that leadership, the informed leadership of the minister and the deputy minister, to ensure that this study takes place. It was suicide up to a point where we got 1448 came back here to report to say these are the people. We also came here and gave categories to say these are the categories. This process was funded by legal processes now, instituted by the union. So where we are, we went, we fought, we didn't send back. When we were interdicted, we fought the interdict, we won the first round, they appealed the interdict. So we are law-abiding citizens. We shall wait for the court to resolve the matter, and then we'll continue with the process that had been started, because it wasn't started in vain, it was started to assist us to do particular things. So when those legal processes are resolved, we shall continue in that regard. The issues of demographics in our recruitment as well as the promotions, I'd like to say, Chairperson, and to yourself and to this committee, yes, there are cases in court, and those cases are ruled by the court. We win some of them because all we are trying to show to the courts is that we follow rational processes in dealing with those promotions. And what am I saying? We try very hard to follow the rules, the laws. I do not believe that as a service we are any deliberate in denying any of our members promotion. When promotion is due to our members and all other protocols are taken into account, those promotions do take place. We promote everybody, white, black, pink, and yellow, and we can check out the
case. Can I ask on this issue that the committee received the figures, the demographic figures on each and every rank in the South African police services on national level as well as in provincials? I'd really like to see the pink ones, so what the leaders are there, but thank you.
You can go with me,
thanks. Sure, we will share it, because we think that the residents here in two categories, in each of those, we'll share with the committee. The utilization of reservists, in particular, the reduction of the levels in terms of from 4 to level, was presented to this committee. That whole process, Chairman, and I remember you did ask the question in the past, and we answered. And the answer has changed. It's still the same as the Chairman, I may say. The policy will revise. The categories have been structured into those two, and we haven't lost any of the focus that the reservists have been doing. And I think perhaps maybe if we have checked on a bilateral level, if it is allowed, we could sit and just again take into account the issues that we are raising, but not much has changed in terms of those aspects. And I can just ask General Stole and General Pinar to maybe talk to that. Okay, General Stole.
Dylan, thank you. I guess the National Commissioner explained these categories were merged immediately after the Minister signed the policy. But at an operationalization level, the functional category addressing category D 100%. But where we can pick it up at operational level, it has been fully aligned with the rural safety strategy. And tomorrow, Chapman, there's a rural safety summit in the Northern Cape. This subject is active on that particular agenda because we are also communicating and also making sure that there are particular awareness. But we are implementing the same category within the rural safety strategy. Thank you.
Maybe just to say also through you, even in this category, currently auditing all the residents to ensure that these criminal issues and the integrity issues are taken into account, and going forward, all that we take in, we also do very rigorous assessment to ensure that we have people that ready to assist us to deal with issues of crime.
Is it follow-up for new questions? I just want
to... No, it's a follow-up, Jason. I mean, there was a suggestion made by the commissioner or by natural talks or whatever. I'd very much like to have that because the problem is I've asked the question and the reason why I'm asking, with great respect, the commissioner actually confirmed just what I said, that yes, we know it's two categories, but I don't really get the real reasons why we only have two now. And okay, I'm not going to explain the time of the committee. It is important to me, and then maybe we'll have to talk. Except if the committee also wants to hear the real reasons. Because it's only confirming that it's only two categories. I know that. I want the reasons. Thank you.
Honourable Mula, do you also have a follow-up or not?
No.
Oh, you're fine. Thanks.
Chairperson, then we got into issues of demilitarization. What we are doing in that regard. I think Chairperson, what we would have to do, because I also heard some of the professionalization comments you made. They are seeking various programs in the strategy. What we will do is to coordinate them, to give you a coordinated plan with timelines, as you were saying, because a lot is being done in this area. And that would give you, you know, a dashboard view of all the efforts that we're busy with, as well as the planning aspect. If we are allowed to do so, we'll be able to put it together for you. The Honourable Tala, you asked a question around using technology and IT systems to manage some of our policing operations, in particular looking at how we can use those to build safety for the officials. And I was looking at the system that the British American Tobacco are using, because their cars are able to tell you everything that is happening in the car. We have the AVL, which we can improve, because the AVL helps us, for instance, when you look at vehicles. We're able to check the vehicle to tell us, where is this car, what is it doing, is it ugly, was it driven very fast, you can locate it in terms of linking, you know, a gun incident to say the nearest car is there and all that. But if you look at the British American Tobacco vehicles, they have the CCTV cameras inside. They record everything that is happening in that car. So you are able to, almost like your cockpit, what do you call that, your black box. So we're able to pick up what has gone wrong in this incident, like the M3 incident. We'll be able to know what has gone wrong, what was the conversation, what was happening. So those are the type of things that we're starting to explore to say, how do we deal with those type of things. And there are other, you know, technologies that we're seeing in other policy environments that can assist us to improve those. And with the CSIR, we are looking at all those. We have prioritized, for instance, the ADL as a system for review by the CSIR, and as part of the process, they're also scaling the market globally and locally to say, what else can we do from a technology to support the other processes that are conduct-related, training-related, skills enhancement-related, such as our street-wise training program. So we will be looking at that also. Okay. The green
monitoring camp, the findings. I think I'm going to ask General Begela and General Nyalunga just at a high level to share, but I'm sure maybe also in writing we can share what we picked up and the badges that we're using to assess the seminar. You know, about the findings, are there any particular findings or tools that we're using and whether it can benefit us?
Thank you, General, National Commissioner, and Honorable Chairperson. I think the grooming camp is part of a big breakthrough in terms of the recruitment process. And the objectives thereof were to improve the quality, to ensure community involvement in our recruitment, and to cut the corruption. So the grooming camp becomes almost the second last leg when we're talking in terms of, I mean, of recruitment. And in the grooming camp, what we do, amongst other things, we do test the driving skills of the members, because they say they have got driver's licenses, but they still must prove that they can drive. I mean, because so that we can prove that they did not buy the licenses, they are actually having the licenses and they can drive. We do the integrity testing in the grooming camp. And that integrity testing, actually fits a lot of people. I think just in the last one that we had in the grooming camp, we had to retain about 1,000 of the people because they could not make it in terms of the integrity test, testing that are doing them. But also what we do in the grooming camp is once more to take the fingerprints, of those people, because we saw it, in the past that they were able to use falsified, fingerprints. So when they come to the grooming camp, even though they had submitted them at the initial stage, we still take the fingerprints at the grooming camp. And all those, those things have actually led to us. That's why we are saying it is yielding fruit in terms of what we are getting, because we are able to test certain things and be convinced that these are the right people.
Chapter 7, maybe let me go back to Honorable Hulever. On page 30 of the strategy that we've submitted, you are able to see the demographics of not there.
Which one?
The strategy. Is it annual report?
Annual report,
okay. On the annual report, actually, if you have it. Page 30, it shows you the previous year's demographic. So, but we'll do the fresh one. If I may just look at the organizational profile from 133 or 583. Yeah, oh, so just an example to say we have, how many? 143 brigadiers. Okay. Or the 563 brigadiers that we're having. Just as an example, we have 143 that are white. And right now we're promoting, so there's a lot that we can share around that. So we promote everybody. Okay. Honorable Ramakani, you ask.
Can I say I still don't get the big ones here, but I still can we also have it on the non-commissioned officers, because there is only one category, because it's normally at a lower rank that we have that problem. The senior levels that's a bit above, but not a bit above, but we can talk about it, but it's the lower end, we don't have that analysis there.
Okay.
No, I think there is a commitment from the National Commission.
Yeah, we've made a commitment. Thank you, Jim. All right. Honorable Ramakakani, people-oriented policing plan. And you asked whether it's a slippage of language or shorthand on issues of war. Maybe let me start off by saying is I haven't seen war in this strategy. We did not be sitting in other judgments. But in the strategies that I submitted, I haven't seen war.
I've seen fight against crime. But let me again just go into the war issue. We hear about the war on poverty. Poverty is the enemy. And as a nation, we must fight against the enemy. We hear about cyber warfare. We're saying cyber crime is dangerous. As a nation and as a global nation, we must take this to them. And here, if there is reference to issues of, if which is not in the strategy, we talk about the fight against crime. If there are issues relating to the war against crime, it's not a war against the citizens. It's war against an illicit practice about something that is still in society, and we can never try and be kind to criminals who are not kind to the nation. So when it comes to that, we're saying, let us be very resolute as a nation to say, we don't want crime. So that is a very important standpoint. It's not the citizens, it is the criminals. And those are those people who choose not to be neighborly. It is people who choose to have these ill practices against a society that is struggling each day, that is investing $76 billion to be peaceful. So it's a very important aspect, but it's got nothing to do with, it's not a secret of language, it's a resolve to say it's crime, it is bedeviling our society, and we must, in unequivocal terms, bring it out to say, we as a South African society want to be peaceful. We want to be, to ensure that people are still safe.
I
was just trying to overturn to see whether indeed the National Commission did sign this document. There is a, on page 7. Yes. Yes. Now the commitment, the commission of the crime, I'm saying, let's have a conversation about this. It's different, the context of what you're talking about, poverty, in the context of war on crime. It's not the same thing. It's an issue of perspective, it's an issue of mind. What is it going to do? I'm saying it's a wrong language, a wrong emphasis. What happened to combating crime? Those kind of lots of words that the police have been using, it's a shorthand. So this one, for declaring war on crime, if crime is committed by the citizen and by people and by youth and by everybody who is a member of the society, it's a wrong choice of a shorthand. So that's my view on it.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger issue to you. I think we can't only call it criminals. We can't. Really, we can't rap criminals in cotton wool. Ask us as the police to practice in a manner that is professional. You say we will take you to jail, but we will take you in a very decent and professional manner. But because of a criminal, we will fight crime. That's the man. Because I think my issue is, we mustn't confuse the criminal by saying we sort of embrace in a way where we are. There must be a resolve, and I think it's a larger debate that society has held, to say, are we going to say to the criminals, you have space to whatever, and then when we say we're demilitarizing and we are not, we're combating with a space for you, there's no space for the criminals in South Africa.
I just wanted to add to what the National Commissioner says, but I first want to respect the government strategic policy, which has been adopted by both Parliament and also endorsed by the Popular Committee. It's lying in the statement in the National Crime Prevention Strategy. In the opening statement, it says clearly, let us declare war on crime. And that strategic policy was adopted. Now, this strategy is part and parcel of the operationalization of the National Crime Prevention Strategy. It only becomes wrong when it's used by the police. But the second one part that I wanted to refer to, police never declare war. They never start the war against criminals. The criminals fight the war against the citizens. And the police come and defend the citizens. And when we find the war in progress, we cannot fight peace. We will fight the war. Thank you.
I think we can have a long debate. I'm just cognizant of the time. We must still go to program one. Maybe if there's very small comments or very...
Very short, sir, person. I don't have a problem that we declare war on criminals. But firstly, we must make sure that they are a criminal. The problem is, if the police arrest you, they already think you're a criminal. And then they declare war. Can I just say on that note as well? Because the general spoke about the grooming camps. Please. Camps? You've got military camps. Are they going to camp? Further, please, call it then a grooming course or something, but the camp is also a problem. If you want to play with semantics.
Right, let's go get into the whole business. Honourable, I'm trying to say anything from your side.
No, no sir. I understand clearly what the police, where journalists come from in terms of the emphasis, but I'm saying this with understanding. Earlier when we were talking about demilitarization and you refer to the old context, that we need to start moving away from that. Now, my question raises in that context. In that context, that even as you speak today, you did say with your old voice that the more you go to militarization, you come second best. Because then it comes, the police are no longer friendly to communities. That's what you say. So that... You said that you are moving away from the militarization,
yes.
And then into more context in terms of the constitution and the service. So I'm saying the same breath, if you take that the same sense in terms of your argument, that particular perspective, you find a different language to say the same. And I'm not arguing that criminals, that the space for criminals in South Africa, that's basically taken to extreme. That argument is extreme argument. I'm talking about in terms of what your perspective is in terms of where we're moving towards. And of course, we all know that you can't argue the point that, and unless you understand this, the problem differently, that whoever commit whatever nature of crime in society belongs to society. It's the people that need to be punished, appropriate to receive the punishment, and rehabilitated back into society. Those are human beings. That's only the point I'm making here. And I mean, you can't default that. Any argument that criminals are coming from are falling from heaven is wrong. It's wrong. This is the only point I'm making. And I'm saying therefore, and I'm not arguing that the strategy is not say that I'm saying the language is probably the shorthand. But if you argue it in the same language that I'm arguing it, you find different language to it.
Right, let's close that debate.
See, but can I just say on a lighter note to my colleague here? There's a saying that says, war and politics are almost the same. The only difference is in war you get killed only once, but in politics anytime. So take it.
Right, let's continue with the responses that just finalized the first round's responses.
Okay. Chairperson, the other question deals with combating corruption. And the honourable member referred to the people. In the report that in what we are doing now, we are making, for instance, crimes by police, it's now a reportable matter on two levels. Where there are deaths of citizens, you have IP doing a report on those crimes and bring them to us for intervention. Whether any other crimes, whether a police has been arrested for stealing or for beating up a wife, whatever. It's a possible matter. We report those things on a weekly basis. The reason why we're doing that is that we don't want to graduate it. To say, what did we do with the report? Is there a concomitant disciplinary process that is taking place, functions that are being looked into in that regard? So the human resources environment would receive that report, they would inform me to say, so far this week we've had so many, and in this quarter, we then put a quarterly report say, in this quarter, how many police were arrested, for what, the level, so that we start seeing, you know, trend lines to start seeing where are these crimes in. The second issue that I want from them is to see a concomitant report that shows me how what we've done. Has there been disciplinary processes? Are they completed or not completed? Do they comply to the transversal targets that we are having? Have they been done within the 60 days or 90 days that the government requires us to do? So that is already taking place. So that's talking about how we combat corruption. I've also indicated that the SIU submit reports that come for the GPSA, whether they come from the municipalities and whatever, and then through the HR process, we look through them and ensure that we continue with the issues that are related to them. And we also pick up other secondary reports, whether it's a public protector or whether it's the presidential hotline, we put it through the same funnel to ensure that internally we deal with them. I have indicated that we set up an internal investigating unit within our JDC, the NINU. So if there are corrupt issues to be investigated within the police, we have two platforms. If they are serious, DPCI goes on to those. If they are less serious, they are of a lower level, our NINU unit within the detectives deal with those. So there's a lot of platforms that we're using, but we want to make sure that at the end of the day, the criminal process is concluded, the internal process is concluded. Right now we're saying, you know, we will check. I want to check those that are reported. Has the regulation to report being investigated being done in case of the police service? If there's any transgression by me, there must be an internal process to investigate so that we can establish a prima facie evidence to go for a disciplinary process. So all the things are really being put together. I think we're making some headway. And I'm hoping that in time we can report that we're starting to get decisions in that space. Then the CJS business plan integration, I've touched on it in terms of the things that we're doing that maybe to add on to that, to say that there's deliberateness in terms of making sure that those 7 points of the CJS are being rolled out. The JCPS cluster is one platform. We have a number of subcommittees there to look into it. And then we have the IDSCJS, which is looking at the technology that brings us together. So there's a board there that is sitting at the DOJ. And we have clearly identified programs that are sitting with the UGS budget when they talk about that today. Technology-wise, the systems-wise, what are we doing to work together? For instance, right now, we're working with the Home Office to integrate our fingerprint systems. They have the harness that kills everybody's fingerprint. We have the ACES, which takes just the criminal ones, but we want to make them work so that we don't just have access to the ones that are already looking as criminal. If we get fresh fingerprints, we must be able to see these systems work. They're able to take us to the non-criminal, to the criminal. So those processes are taking place. There's a lot that is taking place in there. Then you asked a question about the 2% reduction versus the 7% reduction. If I take you back to the old plan, it was talking about a reduction of between 4 to 7% time over a period of 5 years. So when you average, we then rounded it to 2 years in a year, as opposed to the last target that was looking to 4 to 7% over a period of 5 years. So that has been, in fact, we've increased, because if you do an average of 5 and 7, it will give 1 point something. So we've said, no, let's push it up to about 2% each year. That's what explains that. Okay. And then the issue of the HOP, I have mentioned when I opened up here to say, the process of registering a program 6 because Treasury does not want to make them a different group. They still see, even the judgment, still see them as part of the police, but independent within that, and that must be defined. So program 6 will be for the sports. When you approve the budget, you will be approving a particular allocation to program 6. They will account for it. They will, as we see here, they'll see it and give their strategic plan for program 6 there. How they're going to use it and account for everything. That's for how we're going to do the taking program 6. And those processes are very advanced, but we've agreed upon with Treasury. We just need to take it forward to ensure that we conclude, and we hope that when we come to the next cycle, they'll be coming in as program 6 with their staff allocation.
So on that issue, we're going to deal with that on Friday, the walk specifically. There are some issues regarding the latest Constitutional Court judgment that we must raise, but I don't think we're going to raise it now, because there's a number of issues. If Honourable Rakakane can go through his briefing pack, you will see that. Let's talk that for Friday morning when we deal with the walks.
Okay.
That was the lodge.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to give the Deputy Minister of Security, but this, I just want to first get the number.
I forgot what? Yes. Yes. The warrant officer? Okay. I'm going to send on the tailors to answer it.
I think the figure that Sharpe's on for project now, which you now gave, is not true. The figure that we're talking about in the level of warrant officers, because the inspectors they fall, I mean, that is the warrant officer level, is sitting at plus minus 35,000.
That's correct.
No, they were talking about the warrant officers. So I'm referring to the warrant officers. And then the inspection level, because that's what they spoke to. Not unless they were talking about all the non-commissioned, I mean, levels. The promotion policy of the organization is going back to the SSSPC for review, because it has been proven, it has been seen that it is not sustainable. The other issues in terms of recognition of skills and competencies of the members is going to be addressed through the career planning processes in the organization. I think that settles the issue of the hiring officers.
Is there any members' questions that haven't been answered?
No, my question is just the commissioner speaks about 2% that is pushing up that 7% of the 5 years. But I don't remember 7% or between 4 and 7% being 5 years. I thought it's already been a 1 year process. Unless you're looking at that 2 years, as I can sit here and look in her eye. It has never been between 5 years till between 4 and 5. It's always been a year, but annually the crime statistics come annually. So it's always been a 2 years and 7%. So if it's changed, then I think you can say it has changed to that 2 years or 5 years. But I was asking, what do you call the 2%? So I and
I'm
asked the question,
is
the best we can do.
Right, Honourable Knibbel, your comments.
Last one, yes, I just want to say to the Commissioner that as far as the housing aggravated robbery strategy is concerned, it was a joint operation with SAPS and the MEC, but it was disbanded by the then General Petros from the police, just to get those facts to record.
Right, the 2%?
Chairperson, again, I would say the explanation that I've given explains the average, but we've also looked globally, because at 2%, and also looked at our performance. It talks to that, because we can come and tell you that we do 8% in preparing the set, because you have no reference in terms of whatever. If we manage to exceed the 2% and we do more, we'll do that, but globally, I think also, that's almost the type of range that we're using. So we've used a number of things, and this came when we were busy with the statistics policy, working with a SSA. to assist us to say, how do we rationally communicate our performance in a manner that, you know, is consumable, achievable, as well as progresses the reduction of crime?
Right, at this stage I'm going to give an opportunity to the Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and also to members of the Portfolio Committee. Unfortunately, I think today I'll be part of the Members of Parliament, and a member of Parliament.
That's the case.
You know, Chair, when you are outside the police, as yourself as you are there, and when you get inside, and I say where I'm sitting now, there's a lot of things that are happening in the police that you might not be aware of when you are seated outside. But fortunately for me, I've been outside and inside now. I know exactly what is it that is supposed to be done. And I know exactly what is it that members of Parliament want. But unfortunately, when you're inside, those things are not happening. And you don't know what mechanism you can use in order for people to understand where you come from. Unfortunately, it's not happening. You know, Chairperson, some of the national instructions in the Department of Police are outdated. Some of the policies that are being used are outdated in the police. And when you want to correct something because you know what is to be done, you will be told by the police. And when you look at that policy, it's an outdated policy. I'll make an example. The repairing of vehicles of government, I mean of the police. It was an issue that was raised here yesterday, discussed yesterday. Because of the fact that people don't get effective services because of the fact that we say that we don't have vehicles. You know that the Syrian government garages that are supposed to repair these cars, where they take something like 6 months up to a year before they get repaired. And their lifespan when they get back from those, they go back from those cars, it's about 3 months and they'll go back again. Something is not right. I think we should be creative at management. If the policy is not working or is not workable, we need to change our strategy and come up with something, because we are the ones who are implementing those policies. I recently visited the police barracks where most of our members are staying. That's a far walk to say anything after. And then you are again told by a police that a certain department is responsible for this and a certain department is responsible for that. But we, who are responsible for these people, why don't we make it our business? That will change, but it's not quiet. But we don't do that. Because that policy, it's not affecting us. But those are human beings, and those are the people that we want them to go and fight with the criminals. I'm listening to the debate on war or not war, camps or not camps. Even President Mandela, in 1995, I remember very well he said that when people were concerned about the level of crime, high crime in the country, when he said that we need to take the war to the criminals. And it was never a problem at that. But what we need to do is we need to take that to war to the honorable, my friend, coronavirus. School camps, we never had a problem with school camps. We can't have a problem now with the school camps. It depends what we do in those camps. So I still support the camp concept. I was thinking when I was listening to Honorable Ramaphosa with regard to same issues of war, and I'm saying to myself, even in certain department losing hours, we have war rooms. No one is fighting those rooms. But those who still are taking strategies of trying to attend the challenges that a certain department is experiencing, like in social development, as I said, they will say that now, and what general has said that it's war on court. Understand? But it depends what we mean by that. But war, we can't take war to law-abiding citizens. It's obvious that it will be to the criminals. And then I heard also General Pierre spoke about the issue of the clusters, which was also then part of the discussion yesterday. It is true that we have clusters that is responsible for more than 5 police stations. It's no longer a special area. It's exactly what we fought for, 2005, 2006, 2007, when we said that a cluster must not exceed 5 police stations. I was a member of that committee, I remember very well, when we said that 5 police stations, not more than that, in order for them to be able then to monitor those police stations. Because if they are more than that, it won't be possible to monitor those police stations, especially when it comes to the topic of those police stations. And also, the issue that was raised here with regard to demilitarization of facts, that is also contained, Jefferson, in the white paper on safety and security for public participation. Maybe people come up with a suggestion on how we can do that so that we can assist departments in dealing with that area. Because in each and every presentation, that issue do come up. Therefore, it's important that we need to inform members of parliament that in that piece of paper, that the white paper of safety and security, it is contained, and then members will be expected then to participate and make sure that we come up with the correct subject. Unfortunately, I would advise also yourself that in future, let us maybe think of bringing the police management together with the unions. That's how we need to do it. In order for the issues that are being raised by the unions, they raise them in front of management, so that the management can be in a position of responding to those issues. I made it my business yesterday because after yesterday I had the issue, I said, well, not with, but I engaged the unions after that meeting with regard to some of the issues that they raised yesterday. Maybe for the benefit of the department, I need to raise these issues. One of the issues that they raised yesterday in general was the issue of the top heavy structure, that is our national office. Some of the issues I responded to, some of them I did respond to them. But the ones that I put in there are the ones that I could not respond to them yesterday. Those I responded to yesterday, I didn't write them down because at least I had to convince them. And also there was an issue that they raised, that we want to hear what the department is going to say. On the issue that the rank of the lieutenant general, according to them, was abolished by the legislation in 1986, the race position. I couldn't respond to that because I don't have an answer to that. Maybe the department will help us. And secondly, Chair, there was also issues that raised inside and also outside the meeting with myself, the issue of communication in the department. Because of the fact that I saw the ones in the newspaper that there's a lot of money that we are using the department with regard to communication. And the issue that the legislature said was that previously, since the dawn of democracy, communication in the department, especially when it comes to schools, has said it was a major general. And now why a DDG this time around? I bring this forward to them. Hence I decided that I'll bring it to portfolio court. The issue of the filling of the vacant position of the CFO, it says it's since September 2013. What is the problem? Why can't we see the vacancy? Maybe the department will tell us why we can do that. And one of the things that maybe I said, myself as a politician, I needed also to discuss with my partner and the colleagues. It's the recent issue that is being raised by Fokru and both citizens as well. The lieutenant general is equal to Deputy Director General. Now we are excluding the provinces, which is the 9 Deputy Director General. And now they were saying to me, how do you appoint DDGs in other departments? And my response was to them that I was very fortunate, I'm very fortunate as well, because in most of the appointments of those DDGs, I sit in the panel. And then the panel will be some certain ministers, some certain deputy ministers, and some certain DGs. When the panel has decided on an individual, that admission goes to cabinet. There are some of them that has been turned down by the cabinet. They said that this is not the correct person for this position. But maybe because of the policy that I spoke about, it does not happen like that in the police. With the police and Lieutenant General, myself, I put myself, I'm not talking about other people. I will say that from the police media information. But we have appointed 3 or 4 Lieutenant Generals. But me being in the police, I won't know about that. Because maybe there's nothing that said you must let these people know that it is what you have to do. That's why when I started, I said to you, Chairperson, I think there is a lot of things that we need to correct in the police. But behind my mind, I'm saying, as the portfolio committee, as parliament, because our parliament, you have the right to scrutinize all these things. You have the right to come up with a workable situation in some of these issues. Otherwise, we sit here, we think that all is well in the police, where it is not. And even when it comes to the issue of the statistics, where you said that it's 347 persons, this sort of family members, this is one police officer. I would say that all the people that are wearing blue uniforms, you must know that all these people that are wearing blue uniforms, some of them are not police officers. But because they have been hired under some act, they call themselves in blue uniform. And after a certain period, they get themselves being in charge of police officers who are trained on being police. And they don't know the pay of the men and women who are trained police that they are going through. Therefore, I think Parliament, you have a very huge role to play in trying to get the police records correct. But as where I'm seated now, I'm not complaining to you, but I want to give you the insight of what is happening. Under normal circumstances, I was supposed to have been on the other side when I said, responding to yourself. And I can't respond because there is no way when they make this document and bring it to me as a person who is responsible for program 1 and program 2 and say, this is what we are taking to Parliament. So that I should go through it before it comes here and then I say, you are correct or let's correct here and there and there. There's a lot of things that I think I would have responded better to than the responses that I got. But unfortunately, we are not taking on board on what, maybe it's because of the policies that I'm talking about on how police are supposed to function. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for your input. Honourable Twala, if you want to come in. Yes, you
are. Thanks, Chair. I don't know if in the proposed budget of accommodation to issues relating to terror. I don't know how far the Chair on that issue, if you could enlighten us on the terror issue.
Yeah, I think it's coming. There was also a very good information note that was distributed at, I think, at third week of March, but I think General Shetty will speak to that when we come to that program. Yeah. We'll do that. I don't know, is such management, do you want to respond to the DM or what? Or we just take note?
I think we take note.
Right, can we maybe move to the next section regarding the budget? Budget?
Chairman, thank you very much. Just to read the committee in terms of what we'll be dealing with. From slide 26 to slide 37, we're dealing with the budget overview. From slide 51 to slide 54, we then go into the performance measurements. And then what will follow later, I will come to. So for General Secretary to start his presentation, he will be moving from slide 26 to 37 to give us the overview. And then he will then deal with the performance measurements relating to his environment on slide 51 to slide 54. On that note, let me head over to General Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. Members of the committee and all other participants, can we then move to slide 26, please? We are now starting to consider from a resource point of view. And as point of departure, first, we refer and look at our source documents as handled in Parliament. These documents are referred to in a specific slide, slide 26. These are the primary documents in the operating environments we test, also accounted for at the end of the day. Now it's important, Chairperson, also with what you said this morning, if we look at the first indication there, we say the first one is the estimates of national expenditure, which are compiled according to the National Treasury Directives, referring to the 2015-16 amounts that will be appropriated for about 23 bullies. Remember, it's a single vote because we are a national department and a single department. Now it again provides for your program structure, which is so important because it reflects your aims and functions of your department. Then also the allocations according to your economic classification, your items, the items that you use in order to achieve your objectives and perform your functions. I'm going to add a third one here with what you said this morning, and although it is not being appropriated as such, because we are a single vote and not a provincial department with a national department, nine provincial departments with a national department, you will find that we also have centers of financial responsibility, cost centers. Now what we do is we take the allocation, we also apportion it to a third classification system. In a smaller department, it's much easier. You can deal with the department, shall I say, similar to a cost center. If you are a huge department like us, you also have different business units, such as divisions, branches, stations, and other units, such as family violence child protection units. Now, we have the challenge to try and effect the same behavior from the person in Musina, compared to the person in Blue Downs in Cape Town, to the person in Umhlanga, whether it be the person in Pofara. What I'm saying is, because we are a single department, but significantly decentralized, you have to effect exactly the question that you've raised this morning. And we've asked that question in the resource environment a number of times. In essence, sometimes it boils down how much do you do about, how much do you decentralize your large state. But be that as it may, I would also just like to refer to certain aspects, because it's about empowering this person, but also then have the necessary controls in place in order to get the behavior of those patients the same. Now, what would you...
Sorry, just so you're actually saying, if I listen to you correctly, you must please rectify. So if there is, in a, say, crime area like Sea Point and Rondebosch, much more police that work per capita is by per capita. That is a provincial decision. Is that what you say? So national doesn't take interest into that.
Oh no, we still remain the principal at the end of the day, although the provincial commissioner obviously has some discretion. I'm coming to the kind of question that you just asked. I'm narrowing it down and getting to personnel and getting to business as example. But in order for us to then control, what do we have? We have our budgets. We have more than 1,200 budgets for that matter, because every station, every province, also national, for the different cost centers, operational budgets. We have our monitoring and evaluation, because your question was, how do we see to it that the person behaves and performs as such a person should be? We have our risk standing orders and national structures. We have the supervision model. Now, I don't say everything is always working absolutely adequately, but they exist. We have our systems, IT systems with compulsory program rules. We have our exception reporting. We have our reconciliations that you perform for instance your cash advances that you have for S&T. We try to train as much as possible. We have our orders and expenses periodically coming from a different side. We have annual joint planning reviews. We have performance assessments, and then we also have other aspects such as discipline. But that is why the trust concept which has been based is so important, because it is a supervision level, and once you decide exactly what it should be done, and I just leave it there in this regard. But if you know, sir, for instance, as we provide an operational budget, for instance, to your own reports, what we do is we have processes. We receive inputs from a province. We analyze and assess those inputs in the operations environment. We provide them with the allocations, which are then being loaded also for the stations per se. So what you will see is an integrated model to a large extent from province up to national. But the cost center is entrusted to the budget, must manage that budget at the end of the day, and must also account for it internally. And I'm using a budget now. If you're now referring to personnel, we have a certain fixed establishment, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of HR, but the fact of the matter, we use the methodology to determine an FE for Western Cape. And in the Western Cape model, there should also be one on station level. Stations, for instance, were actually prioritized in that model to be granted 100% posts and more in this regard. When the appointments are being made on that level, obviously the provincial commissioner played a role. I would just like to refer to a thing last year which we addressed in your presentation last year where we said the Sinali is a primary cost driver in the vote which also drives direct operational expenditures. Compensation expenditures therefore annually determined from zero per category, taking into account certain aspects. The operational expenditures are predominantly goods, services and machinery, equipment in order to perform the services, and we go on out and explain. But then he says, the budget approach at least is not to apply the budget to region, thereby decreasing the utilization of unique opportunities. You have to leave the provincial commission with some discretion in order to address certain learning points as they arise, nor to apply the budget too leniently, thereby reducing the authority of the budgetary system and voted thresholds. So that is what we said previously as well. But now let's take, for instance, vehicles. We utilize vehicles, for instance, Ronimals. Ronimals should have an asset register. And in the application of your newly purchased vehicles, you firstly try to replace and then you try to go. This is how the model worked, and how we also expanded the model from 7-8 years ago to where we are today. We also have the ratio approach to say that normally we try to maintain a certain ratio per million. So those are two tools that are used and should be used, if it's not used in all instances, in order to determine how many people should there be. For stations, for instance, there's a ratio. This comes actually from a special ratio. And in that ratio, and I hope I have some logic, there's differentiated ratios which have been averaged out. For this hall, you have 1 to 4. For detectives, you have 1 to 2. For support, you have 1 to 14. It has been averaged out to that performance indicator. And that's why that is a performance indicator. So I would just like to refer to these aspects. And obviously, as we go along, we will probably discuss them more into say that. How do we cascade going downwards in this regard? Actually, like everything else, anything can be improved. I'm not sitting here saying everything is 100%, working 100%, but I would like to give some approach that indicates to members of the committee in this regard.
But your decision model, I mean, that's part of the questions we have as a committee. The decision model will you utilize for that in terms of the allocation of resources? Do you take note adequately? I mean, okay, the census is a, for instance, is a useful tool, but there are also other issues like crime, you know, statistics, all those kind of issues. I just want to know the cascading of that in your decision model. Is it up to date? You know, what is the factors you use on an annual basis? Because, you know, we as members of parliament know what's happening at stations in terms of the act. You take last year's one and we just amend here and then it goes through. But the reality is the service or the environmental factors in the police area will maybe change dramatically within 18 months or 12 months. That is just the reality of the country. And the question is, do your decision-making model make provision for those changes that may be very quick?
So it would be not correct to say all instances we say abreast of development shall be just not possible if not so many police stations. But we trust that in general we stay abreast of development, especially also when that provincial commission, that divisional commission, that unit commander can, when he or she approaches us in terms of need and also utilize the resources. And it might be that certain police environments might say, look, I've got too many vulnerable. I can move 3 or 4 vehicles to Langa. That also happens. And that should also happen. And that is where the discretion comes in. Obviously, everything can improve, but I think to a large extent, we do take it into account. But as things evolve, for instance, your new strategies and so forth, we will have to take certain more things on board. For instance, when the family violence, child protection and sexual offences units again were reintroduced, obviously they had to be factored in, they were previously not factored in. Those kind of things, but what we ask sometimes, and we had a discussion the other day, maybe our overtime trend should follow the crime trend in an annual basis. For instance, if we have high crime months, November, December, more overtime should technically be spent in those months because you will have higher deployments. There's continuous improvement, and as we're looking at the new models coming to the forefront, it will have to take it into account. But I don't think we have everything on board. I mean, it's massive.
I think James Tolley wants to speak about the vehicles from Sequoia going to Aditya. You're welcome.
Thank you. No, I just wanted to add to what General said in speaking, what other models we introduce within the policing, that's within the resource matrix, because in your problem-oriented policing, we zoom into the problems identified, like the hotspots. But in each and every police station down there, what we do now, we get into the so-called station profile. When we realize that the situation around the police station, because it reflects in the embedded station profile, we begin to say that station, that area, the policing demand is beginning to outgrow the station profile. And those reports, I come back, I share them with General Begera, and I share them with the General Begera. So that the strategic deployment, it entails the strategic deployment of resources. An example of that also in what is happening within the Salary Partnership with the National Comprehensive State. We then come back and say, in order for us to have sustainable policing in this area, this is what should happen with the kind of resources, and it adds to this explanation.
Thank
you.
Let me say, what's taking into account what my colleagues are saying, what I hear you say, is that that area can be better improved so that a more responsive, as you say, to the life needs, current needs of that particular environment, as well as to the specific resourcing requirements. It's not going to be easy because we don't have a bag full of money, but at least we should be able to say, when we prioritize where are the strongest learning platforms, as General Solid is saying, we should be saying to the provincial commissioner, did you take into account the following as you confirm your budget? I think that's an area that we note. Let us see how we hone in. And also to say, you know, the establishment of the finance committee is meant to do exactly this, because we would like to engage with this partitioning and allocation of resources in that manner. So maybe let's note what you're saying and see how it can further enhance what we are already doing.
Maybe on that issue, maybe it was also raised by the Deputy Minister, and this committee must raise it. We received the feedback in terms of the resolutions of the last BRRR process. It's the question of the CFO. Now, we sit with a situation where the South African Police Service has got 11% of the national budget, 11%, and is not a CFO in the organization. It's already more than a year, I think, longer than a year. We've raised that at various instances in this committee. Can we maybe get an indication whether the post was advertised or what date? Whether there was a shortlisting taking place and when the appointment will be made. Can we just get that feedback? You know, the committee just want to get that. That's what we should.
Chairperson, let me first start saying that the subs have a CFO post as part of the new structure that we have. General Secretary used to be the old CFO. We have not yet advertised. We will advertise. I have given a commitment that will be coming back, and we'll look at the timeline in terms of that communicated to you. At this point in time, I'm not able to give that timeline.
Well, the National Commission is totally unaccepted.
Yeah.
Totally. We will have to write to the Minister, the Minister of Police, because we can't have a situation where, and I mean, we want the PFMI to be successful. We want to ensure that the risk perspective in terms of your top management, because if you look at the annual report of last year, that was tabled, that block is still open in terms of the CFO, or the block. But And then we're already towards June, July. And from a governor's point of view, I don't know, other members must also reflect on it, but we can't accept as a committee. Honourable Smith.
I completely agree with you, Jefferson, and the commissioner, as I said, the post will still be advertised. It means the project didn't even start. Can we hear the reasons why it has not been even advertised at this point?
If you look at those blocks, there were many. Now the only block or two or so that are remaining is the Tiago and all those. It's not like we've been sitting and not doing anything. We filled a number of those. And the CFO was part of those. We will look at it, Jefferson, and I will put my commitment in writing and share the commitment to yourself and to the minister from a time perspective. And in terms of managing our resources, Jefferson, we haven't had any challenges in terms of our audit. It still shows that even in the challenging time of filling that post, we are still managing well. I will commit the timeline in writing.
Honourable Ramadan.
Honourable Chair, just a follow-up on this question. Surely the National Commissioner, this matter of the CEO, is more than one. It's been on for some time now. And surely the concern that stress of the committee around it is not new either. What is that I find difficult to accept that coming here, knowing that we are dealing with the issue of the budget and this issue is going to come up, that the management has not applied its mind to this question and at least say this is a timeline issue. It was coming here is almost like a new issue that we still have to apply the mind to in order that is the to be able to afford to implement it. I find it very difficult that we're dealing with the budget as we're dealing with it. I understand that there's no problem, that we have not have a problem, but we are required to comply with an act that governs the money, in particular the BMFA issue. So we will have a very difficult processing and going forward. I must just say that unless we get a clear indication, we would have a difficulties in terms of dealing with the budget. Because we need the issue of accountability and the issue of the chief financial officer is critical. Now, Chair, I don't know, and I don't want to take other people, but I just want to say that to the management that we have to take each other very serious. In particular, the committee that has to approve this budget. We have to take each other very serious on it. And in dealing with each other on it, we have to attach that seriousness to it. For now, in the response I'm getting, I don't get that. Frankly, I don't get it.
Honourable Molebasi.
Thank you, Professor. Can I be reminded why there is no advertisement of this program?
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I should just go back a bit, Jefferson, to say you recall that our CFO has always been generous. With the revealing of the structure, we then asked General Skate to play the role of being the DNC of other areas. As opposed to the other areas, we didn't have a bigger challenge in his space because he was still sitting there as the CFO as well as playing the other roles. Rank said, for us to optimize his role, we would have to create a CFO position which is independent of his role. So as such, we still have 8 people that is playing that role, whereas we've extended his responsibility. And to ensure that he's able to optimize as a DNC, we then have to fill the role. So the crisis was lesser as opposed to some of the other areas. And indeed, Chairperson, I give my commitment to this committee that when I come back next year to do what I'm doing here, or even maybe any other of the programs, I will commit in writing my timing in terms of how I'm dealing with it. And I want to say in this response that our CFO, who has been there, who has been given additional roof, is still there, and this is why we are able to continue to remote what we're doing. In terms of feeling that articulate the role of an independent CFO because we've given a new role, I commit to coming back and committing the time there. And I also want to say, remember when we were having this conversation, it was not only a CFO role. You want me also to look at all those other blocks. We've made good progress in that regard. I could have been reporting progress on the CFO, and indeed I undertake to do that. I am not undermining the importance of it.
No, I think we're going to do, we're going to ask just the committee members to stay behind. We're going to anyway go for lunch now. The rest of the police delegation, and also other people, I just have a quickly close meeting. Only members of the committee. Let's do that. And then we come back at, say, 20 past 1. If I can just have a close meeting of only committee members. Thank you.
There's an issue when you are just across.
Yeah, lunch. Lunch, I think, will be in the foyer. It's not ready.
I've got the presentation ready for the registry.
But we can check. Yeah. Yeah. We will be quick. Thank you.